Blog Talk Radio.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times. Then grab it! Grab it!
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Welcome back, folks. It's Reese on the Radio live here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. The number is 347-8308-8701. That's 347-308-8701. We are live here every weekday night from 7 to 10. It is Tuesday, February 7th, 2012. Pleasure to be back. A lot of news and views. Here, put it as we always do. Break down the news and give you my personal views. Of course, I normally don't care what it is that most people think. I've got my own opinions. You can, of course, can express yours if you don't. Whatever. That's fine with me. Be sure to log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll give you updates in the next court date. That's, of course, happening tomorrow, February 8th. This is where we finally get our decision on a motion that was filed by the district attorney's office on whether or not the witness in the case can be, well, pretty much doesn't have to testify in the court of law at my alleged next trial, and when indeed that will be happening, or if indeed it will be happening. And we'll be giving you updates all day throughout the day on ReeseOnTheRadio.com to let you know what's going on. I go in tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and we should have at least some news for you, wow, probably as early as noon tomorrow. So log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com to get those updates, and of course we will update you here on ReeseOnTheRadio on BlogTalkRadio.com. Plenty of news, like I said, today. We have a wide array of topics to get into today. We'll be talking about them, of course. There are plenty of places that I can go. But as you know, it's Reese on the Radio, and it's racism all the time. Right now, Reese on the Radio, as I've said over and over again, that the race for the White House will become a race issue. And there are people out there who are geared toward making this about race, not about the issues. There are plenty of people who are concerned about race. It's usually those on the left. And again, I won't dispute that there are racists in every group, you know, be they independent, be they Republican, be they Democrat, but the racism is there. I, of course, like to express the racism of the Democratic Party because they're the ones who are claiming to be about you and your race, to be caring about you and your disenfranchisement. They're the ones that seem to be fighting for your civil rights. And in order to do that, they must demagogue, vilify, demonize their opposition at all costs. So when this audio came to me, I was not surprised because of where it came from. Those of you who are familiar with the race baiter, Reverend Al Sharpton, the racist race baiter, Reverend Al Sharpton, who I heard openly use the F word, and I'm not talking about the F word you people are familiar with. I'm saying the F word as in the F word relating to homosexuals. That's right. What date? Oh, I have the date. I have the date. It's August 25th, 2001. That's right, when I heard him openly refer to people as the F word. Openly heard the word. Now, why do I remember that date, ladies and gentlemen? I'll tell you why. Because it was the same day that R&B singer Aaliyah died. That night, in fact. She died that morning. He used the F word on August 25th, 2001. I was having dinner with Reverend Al Sharpton, Mayor David Dinkins, Martin Luther King III, and Mr. Chow's in Manhattan, where he used the F word when talking about gays. So the race baiter, Al Sharpton, is at it again. And this was on his radio show, and you can find it anywhere. You could probably find it online. But I know who Al Sharpton is. That's the reason why I don't like him. That's why I have no respect for him. Because he will use Negroes to line his pockets. And what he does is never, ever, once challenged by the mainstream media. And if it is challenged, he will give an apology and they'll keep it moving. So I'd like to ask you people, what the hell is Lily White? Is the term Lily White a racist comment? That's what I'd like to ask you. Is the term Lily White racist? That's my question. I have an excerpt from Al Sharpton's radio show. We're talking to a gentleman by the name of Dr. Earl Hutchinson, who appears to be upset by an op-ed piece that he did talking about Mitt Romney's supporters and why there are no blacks visible in his support staff or his supporters or his voters, people who vote for the caucus. That's what they're questioning. Why are there not enough black people there? And I've got one question. So what? What's that got to do with anything? Black people and their issues is what they're concerned with. Reverend Al Sharpton and Dr. Earl Hutchinson. They're worried about black issues. I don't know what a black issue is. I have no clue what a black issue is. Blacks care about taking care of their family. Blacks care about education. Black people care about work. Black people care about paying their bills. Is that separate from the white issue or any other American's issue? Hey, how about any other human being's issues? But Al Sharpton seems to have a problem. And so does Dr. Earl Hutchinson. So they want to know, where are Mitt Romney's black supporters? Here's the audio.
Mitt Romney, Willard as I call him, which is his first name, won the Nevada primary. Nevada caucus, I should say. And you raised the question of where are Romney's blacks. Now, the reason I think it's a legitimate question and I want you to elaborate is that this is probably the first season on generation of Republicans I've seen that do not even have blacks identified in their campaign. I mean, even George Bush, we knew his blacks, Condoleezza Rice, we knew Colin Powell. I mean, when you think about it, you raise a very interesting point. These Republicans don't even have blacks that we can say this is the blacks they relate to.
Exactly. Well, you know, and it's really interesting, Reverend Al, in light of the Nevada caucus win, you know, I watched very carefully and listened very closely to Mitt Romney's victory speech. and I was not so much interested in what he had to say. I mean, you could mail that in. I was more interested in who was in the audience. And I got to tell you, Reverend Al, it even drove it home even more. The point that, you know, you're making, and certainly I tried to make, is how Lily White, and I'm not talking about the camp, I looked at the crowd, it's one black face. Now, it's always been standard, going all the way back to Richard Nixon, that you'd always have a few black faces here and there for effect and photo ops and so forth. You know, and occasionally you'd get some endorsements from a black celebrity, a black entertainer, you know, going all the way back to Sammy Davis Jr., Will Chamberlain with Nixon, and, you know, Reagan had his blacks, Bush Sr. had his blacks. They all did, certainly Bush Jr. But what I was struck by, that these guys, and especially Romney, I'm going to really zero on him, how Lily White, not only his campaign is, his staff is, those that are doing a lot of the prep work for him, as a matter of fact, so white that, and certainly he's no liberal by any standard, former Oklahoma congressperson J.C. Watts, even he called Romney out some months ago and said, essentially, where are the blacks on your staff? And he's a black conservative.
So, where are the blacks? I don't care. Personally, when Barack Obama's got 90%, well, now 85% of the black vote, it's pretty evident where they're going to be. I mean, there's African Americans for Barack Obama. I said this last week. That would this be fair if it was Mitt Romney having African Americans for Mitt Romney? They would have said, trying to kowtow to Negroes? What would he say to them? What would he do? What could he say? Now, JC, I know you wanted to jump in on this real quick. What did you have to say?
I believe that there are no blacks on his campaign simply because they don't. I mean, the Mormon faith doesn't believe in black people.
Well, in 1970,
according to their doctrine,
In 1976, it was 79. Well, no, it was 76. I'm positive. It was 76. The African Americans were allowed to join the Mormon faith. That was 1976.
Okay, they were allowed to join. They were allowed to join. They weren't allowed to hold clergy until...
That's correct.
Or become clergy until 79.
You're correct. Absolutely
But their
right.
beliefs are still that our skin is dark because we're cursed.
Okay.
I mean, that's what their religious... Yeah, the religious doctrines state. I mean, it still states that. That's why I wanted it to this day, as a music DJ for parties, or even if I do local radio here in Hartford, Connecticut, I won't play a Gladys Knight track.
Because she's Mormon?
Yeah. A devout Mormon at that.
I understand that she is.
Yeah.
So, Mary, do you see anything wrong with this? Do you think that there should be some black faces in Mitt Romney's campaign?
I think the whole thing is just stupid. I mean, why are they, why is anybody segregating from anybody? It just doesn't even make any sense. Al Sharpton.
No, that started the day Romney was born.
If he was born into that Mormon religion. Whoa. Hold on, JC. I'm going to give you an opportunity to look this up. Go on YouTube and look up Mitt Romney talking to Tim Russert on Meet the Press, and he talks about when he found out that African Americans could join the Mormon faith. All right, it's Mitt Romney on Meet the Press with Tim Russert talking about blacks in the Mormon church. And when he talks about how he was driving in Philadelphia and he pulled on the side of the road and he cried, because I did a bit on this in Boston called
I remember.
Remember that?
I remember, right.
That's right. Mitt Romney said that when he found out that African Americans could join the Mormon faith, he pulled over on the side of the road. He was driving from school in Philadelphia or somewhere in Pennsylvania. He pulled off to the side of the road and he cried. And I did a little bit called Cry for a Negro.
Right, I remember that.
Okay, so the bottom line is Mitt Romney you know, whether or not it was genuine or not, he hasn't shown any personal indifference with African Americans. I mean, he dealt with African Americans in Massachusetts, in Dorchester, and in Roxbury, you know, in Mattapan. He dealt with a lot of African Americans in those communities. And a lot of those people liked him. A lot of those kids posed with him when he went out to their community events. So I never heard of any African Americans that didn't like Mitt Romney. And when they want to talk about black, I mean, do we really need to pepper in, pardon the expression, but we need to pepper in some blacks for in order for him to be a legitimate candidate?
No.
Why does it have to be about race?
No, no, if that's his beliefs, then that's his beliefs.
But you don't think that it's racist to refer to the supporters of Mitt Romney as Lily White?
Yeah, that is pretty racist. I'm not agreeing with all something. I mean, you know how I feel about him. I still want answers to Shawana Brawley.
Which
I think we'll never get.
He's never going to apologize for that. Never going
to apologize. And I'm still waiting on an apology to the Duke lacrosse team.
And he's never going to apologize for that.
I don't believe in Al Sharpton. I think he's stubborn. I think he's a stubborn pickhead at racism himself.
I couldn't agree
more. Who has done nothing for the modern civil rights movement? He's done absolutely nothing. Hip hop has done more for race relations in his country than he has, and he's even gone after hip hop.
Oh, he has. I mean, he's found every opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
But he, you know, again, he's another, as I like to call him, a racist race beta.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for them to get on
and say he's Lily White and all this other crap and talk about, call him by Willard and all this other, because it's a proper name, I guess, and, you know, but it just doesn't even make any sense. I mean, you just...
Well,
all of that is just making it worse for everybody as a whole.
It's funny that you mention that. It's funny that you mention that because, you know, they're calling him Willard to mock him. But let a politician refer to Barack Obama as Barack Hussein Obama, and they'll be screaming up the rafters. You know, you remember that whole controversy during the 2008 election of Bill Cunningham, who's got a syndicated show, right now, it's a syndicated nationwide television show. Bill Cunningham referred to him as Barack Hussein Obama, and they told John McCain to drop him from the campaign and denounce him. So we can't call Barack Obama by his full name, but you can call him Willard and mock Mitt Romney.
Well, of course, because they're black and he's white, and that's how it goes. Most of the time, you can get away with things like that if you are black and the other person is white. It doesn't even, and I'm not saying it's right that it's right on either side. You shouldn't do that to anybody. You shouldn't attack anybody because of their race or anything like that. But they're just so ignorant. I mean, that whole discussion was just pure ignorance. It didn't make any sense at all. But there'll be lots of people that are going to be seeing his, that are going to be seeing their views, seeing it the way that they do, and then.
But they're only catering to one group. That's the part I find even more offensive, that the only people they're catering to are black people.
That's the only people that they ever cater to, because they think that those are the only people that exist in this country.
Yeah, you see, that's interesting you say that, Mary, because do you think when you say that they're only paying attention to those particular people, are you saying that people like Al Sharpton have blinders on and they're only focusing on black people because that's the only people they believe they can reach, or the only people that they want to reach?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
I don't know what white folks that crazy old Al Sharpton is reaching, but whoever they are, well, good for them. Because you ain't, I mean, he's crazy. And even black folks say he's crazy. There ain't nothing wrong with him.
Exactly.
He is
I was just, I was just getting ready to say that. I don't think he's reaching black folks either because, again, while Al Sharpton's on the air, especially in cities like New York, you got Hot 97 over there. You got Power 105 over there. And you got XM Radio that's pretty huge in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not listening to any AM stations for black political talk. It's just not happening.
Yeah,
the only time they get any taste of Al Sharpton is when he's making noise when he feels as though there's been a huge injustice to a black person, and even then he doesn't check his facts strong enough to where if the incident turns out to be totally bogus, like in the Tawana Brawley or the Duke Lacrosse cases, he slowly slides away to the back because he knows he can't because nobody's paying attention to him anyways.
Someone's paying attention to him. This guy's got a six-figure gig at 6 p.m. on MSNBC. I mean, he's reaching the masses on a national level. You know, he's doing well. The guy's kicking in at least 500,000 viewers a night.
Really?
Extremists are paying attention to him. Other crazy people.
No. I'm going to tell you who's paying attention to him.
Please tell me, because I tend to agree with Mary on this one.
I don't think it's extremists because I don't know too many people in the hood that's watching MSNBC. I'm thinking it's more so white folks trying to figure out what he's up to next.
Nah, you know what? Okay, I can understand where you're going with that, JC, but here's what I'm saying on this level. What I really strongly believe as far as the extremist goes and the point Mary's making about extremists is that there are people out there who really believe the race-baiting rhetoric of guys like Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jackson who want their beliefs or their ideology validated. And they go to guys like them, and they listen to guys like them to validate their own ridiculous beliefs. And if the numbers reach 500,000, 600,000, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket compared to how many people live in this country. But, being said, I think it's enough to pay attention to.
Right, because right.
600,000 people is a lot of people to be watching.
That's not a drop in the bucket, but on the same token, he's on at 6 o'clock?
6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on MSNBC.
The same time as 106 in parts, who happens to have the number one show on cable at that hour. 106 in part took, what's the one on MTV that's going on
the afternoon?
The
TRL took their top spot.
Sent TRL out of business.
Yeah, you're right. But a part of that was because a lot of those mainstream kids that were watching TRL, and once Carson Daly left, they started gearing more and more towards what was considered popular music, which then was hip-hop and R&B, as far as videos were concerned. And a lot of people geared towards that. A lot of those kids grew up and sort of fell out of the MTV phase. That's why MTV ended up becoming such a TV station versus a music television station. But you're right about a lot of the young black kids are only watching BET. I mean, I can go to my niece, Rebecca, right now. And sure enough, she's watching music videos, and she wouldn't be able to cover, you know, she wouldn't be able to answer one question about what were political views, what politics were happening today. She'd probably know who Barack Obama was, but she couldn't answer one political question. Joining us, of course, on the show, as always, is the Kool-Aid Man. James is on the show. James, I know you just joined us. We were asking.
I've been listening.
Oh, you are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, he cut you off. I've been listening.
So did you hear the Reverend Al and so you heard the audio?
Yeah, I heard the audio.
Okay. So what's your opinion? Don't you think that referring to Mitt Romney supporters as Lily White as somewhat as racist? I mean, that's just as racist as calling somebody, you know, a porch monkey, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the Lily White comment was a little overboard, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely overboard.
So So does Mitt Romney, in order to help America, does he need black faces in the crowd to legitimize his point of view or his stance politically?
Well, if you're going to be running on a platform that you're talking about, that you're going to be there for everyone, every American, then you need to have every American represented.
He does.
And it surprises me. It surprises me sometimes with you and your numbers, okay? Because one minute you say, all right, well, 9,000 is a lot, all right, but black people aren't, our numbers aren't enough to be taken seriously in the political in the political field.
That's not what
I said this before.
That's not what I said. I said if you're not out, no. If you're not a part of the political process, you are not going to be considered. Is what I said. If you're not a part of the political process, that is why you're not considered. If you don't join the mainstream, you're not going to be considered politically. But if you want to make this an issue about, I'll give you a perfect example. Do the Asians get out there and vote about their issues? Yes, they do. Do Latinos in this country vote about their issues? Yes, they do. In fact, they're even sought after by guys like George Soros, who goes out there and gives kids $300 for school supplies in Corona, Queens, to get people's address and information to get them to vote in the next election. George Soros does this. You know, there are groups out there who are always politicized based on their ethnicity. African Americans, they're the fewest to show up. The average group, this is an absolute fact, 24% of African American registered voters. That means you take 100 people who are registered to vote, only 24 of them show up. Okay? We're not talking about all of the African American community. We're talking about 100% of registered voters who don't have felonies, who can vote, who are a part of a precinct. Only 24% of registered voters go out to the polls. The only time when that number rose was during the 2000 election for Barack Obama. 2008 election for Barack Obama. So the bottom line is, if you're not a part of the political process, you're not a part of it, you can't expect your issues to be discussed. And that's my point. But that being said, I'm going back to the whole thing about Lily White. Why is it that if anyone had said this about any other group, why is it okay for them to use this? Why is this permissible under any circumstances? Lily White, as if this is to say that his supporters are insignificant because of their skin color. That's my point.
Well, I'm saying, man, I did say it was overboard. And, you know, I just think that you tend to skew things more towards this way or that. If you're going to say it's bad for everyone to do it, then do so.
As I've always said, it's not right for anyone to do it. It's never right for anyone to do it. And to marginalize his supporters by referring to them as Lily White is ridiculous. To refer to them as Lily White is ridiculous. And it's racist. It's race baiting. Okay? And as if to say calling them Lily White is an okay term under any circumstances. Under any circumstances, when this is a vote about people, not about the color of their skin, why make it about race? That we need blacks peppered in order for his point or his political standpoint to be
legitimate. Why I think about race is because we're talking about Reverend Al Sharpton, and they still live in these days of slavery. That's what they live in. It doesn't make any sense. It's permissible because white people were not enslaved, and they deserve whatever it is that they get because white people enslaved black people. But those days are over.
Well, you know, if black people are so concerned about slavery, if black people are so concerned about slavery, why don't they ever stop what's happening in China?
Excuse me? What does that have to
do? No.
They don't have the power to.
If slavery is such an issue with African American people, why not be outraged about China? China has a slavery problem. What do you think those people go through? Paid $17 a day? That's
okay,
not
but
a
on the
form
same
of
token,
slavery?
On the same token, Reese, Chinese people weren't picked up out of their country, dragged across the ocean, and enslaved for free.
Whoa. They're enslaved in their own country. $17 a day. If you have a daughter, the daughter is euthanized, they will kill your child if the child is a girl.
Yeah,
based upon their population control.
Based on their population, right. I'm not saying that that's necessarily right, but I'm sure if given an opportunity to go democracy over there as opposed to the communism that they have over there, they would support their current offerings.
I don't think that African Americans care anything about slavery. I think what they care about, most importantly, I think the most important thing that they care about is about how can we make this profitable for us. That's all I can see. Is how can we make this profitable. Yeah, I think every African American leader who's out there screaming to the rafters about this garbage that they always do is nothing about anything but profitability. I think that's all it's about. It's not about the struggle. The struggle is over. The opportunity the struggle is over. The opportunity
I don't buy that.
Wow, the struggle is never.
You guys cannot say that the struggle is not over. We have a black president. You cannot
say that the struggle is not over.
The struggle is over.
Mary.
Struggle's over.
You can be
anything you want to be, regardless of the color of your skin in this country today.
That's right.
You can
do and
be anything that you want to be. So do not sit here and say that the struggle is not over because
there's still
is.
A struggle here. All right, there is
What's
still
wrong?
A struggle here. When
What's
it,
wrong?
When you go on national radio and you have blacks and whites and blacks. Saying that we're being marginalized, okay? When you get up and you tell people about your family and how little faith you have in her, all right? That the fact that you could call her up right now and say and ask her who Barack Obama was, she would know what Barack Obama is, but wouldn't know any of his issues, okay? There's still a struggle here.
Yeah, that, and
there's
that's
still a struggle with the stereotypes.
Yeah.
There's still
yeah,
a struggle
yeah.
with the discrepancy.
What is that struggle, James? That struggle is the fact that no one is taking the time out to understand what is going on in politics. No one's taking the time out
because
to educate themselves.
I don't know who you're talking to. I don't know who you're talking to, but I talk to a lot of them. All right, and time after time, when we do raise our voices, we're told we have to wait, we have to sit down, we have to take the back seat, because our progress is slow, and we get lip service after lip service after lip service. And then as soon as we start getting upset and irate, when we get passed over time and time again, then it's, now we're
angry black folks.
Yeah, we're angry black folks. It's like you can't win for losing.
James, the reason why there are African Americans in this country who do not know the issues, who do not follow politics, is not the fault of someone else.
Wait, James,
let me finish.
There are people, black, white, yellow, and chartreuse, okay, who don't vote on the issues. Don't just marginalize black people. It's happened all over the place.
James, you're 100% right. There are plenty of people across the board who do not know the issues, but I'm talking specifically about blacks. And I can counter your argument by saying this. If there are white kids out there who don't know politics and don't know the issues of the day, you would not subject them to the moniker of being of going through a quote-unquote white, Asian, Latino struggle. You wouldn't. I'm talking about the black struggle. And again, the argument is the black people who are struggling with finding out the issues is of no fault but their own. They refuse to educate themselves. You can't wait for somebody to educate you. There is no such thing. You understand? You ever saw that... You ever read that short story back in the day where everything was a TV commercial. No matter where you were, no matter what you were doing, you were bombarded by television advertisement. It's an old short that I'm almost certain is by Ray Bradbury. But the bottom line is that you cannot spend your entire life as an African-American waiting to be indoctrined. And that's what black people are waiting for. They're waiting for someone to indoctrinate them into their... No, you're... James, this is your point. You said that they're not
No.
Okay. You said they're not educated. Well, who is supposed to educate them? The government or themselves?
No.
Who is responsible for their education?
I never said they weren't educated.
I'm asking.
You did.
I'm asking.
And I've said that I don't know who you're talking to, because the people I talk to, all right, the black people I talk to are plenty involved, and they're plenty knowledgeable. I don't know who you're talking to or how many of these people you're talking to.
All I asked you was one question.
Yeah, but you know what, James?
Who's responsible for educating black people? Who's responsible?
Well,
and on the same token, James,
anyone is themselves. Correct.
I agree to a great deal, James, but on the same token, the people that you're talking to are the small group of people in your circle. Look at those outside of your circle.
I
have the same issue.
James, the bottom line is that what African Americans, blacks, Negro, whatever it is you want to refer to them as, they have become these lambs who are sucking on the teeth of indoctrination.
No.
They are, James.
Sucking on the teeth
of
indoctrination. No,
yes,
it's more along the lines that we are forced to be indoctrinated. It's all of a sudden, when anyone says anything about if you're proud of your race, then you're a racist. Okay, I get it. All right? But you know what? It always seems that black people are the ones who are supposed to toe the line and get on board. And yet, we're
by
the ones who are always treated as different. By everyone. Nobody likes it as well.
James, yeah, exactly. I'm glad you said that. Because if you step out of the framework of what's considered the black social view, you're called an Uncle Tom, a sellout. If you think for yourself, if you believe anything that the rest of African Americans believe, you're called the worst names. It was Cornel West who called Herman Cain sucking on a symbolic crack pipe. It was Michael Eric Dyson, professor at Pennsylvania University, who said that it was Herman Cain who was trying to curry white favor with his beliefs. He couldn't even be an independent thinker. He was absolutely ostracized for his beliefs, for having his own frame of thought. I get criticized all the time for that, and I don't want to make this about myself, but you know this more than anybody. How many times have we gotten the moniker? You and I alone, James, have gotten the moniker, talking white, acting white, thinking white. You know that. If you dare step out of what's considered the African-American mainstream, you are ostracized, you are marginalized, you are vilified. That's what I'm talking about. So what African-Americans expect is to be indoctrinated into a belief that has been set up for them to fail. Tell me I'm wrong.
I'm not getting that. I'm not getting that point.
get that point?
Because what I'm saying is, all right, well, talking white or whatever, I'm not talking about that right now. What I'm talking about is, you know, even beyond the fact that we've been called those names time and time again, all right, because we deign to have more of a positive outlook about ourselves or we speak a little differently. The fact of the matter is that even though we've gotten it from our own, we've gotten it from the other side as well, how they're just so shocked that we even speak well.
Oh, absolutely.
How they're so shocked.
Absolutely.
That, you know, we wear our pants above our waist.
Absolutely.
It's almost like you get it from all sides.
However,
absolutely. You know, again, we've been told that we're not black enough for black folks, but we're not white enough for white folks. So
where are we?
I don't think anybody...
Wait a minute.
Go ahead, man.
So this is this is my thing. As a white person, or as someone from a Caucasian descent, I get it from both sides, too. I get it from black people, and I get it from white people. Oh, you sound, where were you raised at? Are you mixed? Are you, you know, what's going on with you? Because I'm not white enough for white folks, but I'm just black enough for black folks.
Okay. So if everyone has been there and done that, then why is it when we actually talk about it or say anything about it, we're not supposed to?
James, but my point is, my going back to earlier what I said that you got very upset about, my point is, regardless of what regular people, everyday people think of how I sound or how I talk or how you talk or how you sound or how you present yourself, in this country today, you can be whomever and whatever you want to be as long as you put forth the effort. You may have to put forth a larger effort than other people, and those other people are probably people that have money, not people that are different, that have a different skin color, just money, because that's really where we
or
are
have influence.
Educated.
Or marry, or have influence. You know, there's
or
a lot of
influence.
Yeah, there's a lot of nepotism in this world. You know, some people out there have plenty of influence. You know, you go to some of these traditionally black colleges, and if you have a name in one of these traditionally black colleges and you go to that school, there's a lot of nepotism that happens. And nepotism is a part of our lives. It's really, really not. And there's more of a class warfare in this conversation that we can get into. There's more about a class thing versus a color thing. But when I
exactly.
say the black... When I say the black struggle is over, it is you, even if you're black and you believe you've got to do double the work of your counterparts, you can argue all day that it's not fair, James. But I view the word fair as subjective. There's no definition. For me, there is no such word as fair because it's subjective. Everyone can argue what's fair. That would be like saying, oh, some guy wins the lotto, I should win the lotto too. It's not fair that he won. That's subjective. It's not fair that I grew up in a poor family. That's subjective. You can end up being a captain of industry coming from a poor family, make your billions of dollars, and end up helping the poor. It's not about fairness. It's subjective. That is subjective. So you can't use these things, these cliche remarks about what it is that we have to do as black people. That's bullcrap. We live in a country where
the same struggle that you would go through paying for college and getting through college, and James, we know each other on a personal level, so the same struggle that you would go through to get wherever you need to get to, I would be going through the same exact struggle.
You know, I had a friend named Lisa who was on Facebook the other day, and she said on her Facebook page, she said, I understand the whole discrimination thing, but she was angry because she couldn't get her white daughter any grants or any, scholarship for her daughter to go to school. She's a white woman. Her father's a white man. They have a white daughter. They're struggling. They're not working paycheck to paycheck. They have a little bit of savings, but they want their daughter to go to school. She couldn't find one way to help her or to assist her daughter in order for her to go to school because she wasn't a minority. And she's just like any other average family out there working really, really hard and is middle class. And there are things out there that are completely barring this bright girl. And I know Alex, her daughter. I call her A-Rod for short. That's always been my nickname for her. And I love this girl. She's a good girl. She's a smart girl. And all she wants to do is to be the best that she can. But she can't even get cut a break because she's white. As if that's some sort of, like, that's a punishment. And you can't tell me.
I'm sure they're okay. I don't get it because this woman
is not rich. Her family doesn't have any lineage at any of these colleges. Her daughter just wants to go to school and get the opportunity that everybody else should deserve. But there are opportunities.
Yeah, she can go to school and have those opportunities, but she's going to have to take out loans and pay those loans back.
Yeah, and she wants to be if there's a break out there for her, if everybody else can get a break, why can't she get a break? Why should somebody turn her away before the color of her skin? That's what I'm saying, James. This is bull. They're turning her away for the color of her skin. And what's that to do? Because so we can have an even playing field? Is that the mantra they're using? We need to have an even playing field. So that means that kids, no matter who it is that they are, if it's all about equality, if it's all about all of us having the same breaks, why is it that she's marginalized because of her skin color and people say that's okay? She's white. She'll be all right. That's bogus.
Well, I'm saying it is without those breaks that you call them, all right? And the fact of the matter is that she does have more opportunities to do and to get it. I'm not sure why she's being turned away simply because she's white or, you know, because there are scholarships and all of these things, and it's not just for black people, okay? Because the way you're putting it is the only people who get scholarships or get those breaks are black people. That's not the
minorities.
Case either.
I said minority.
Okay.
I said minority.
That's not the case either.
James, there
it
are
is
my
not the
listen
case
to me.
Either.
Look, when my stepdaughter got into NYU, listen to me, when she got into NYU, do you know why she got in? She got in on a grant. She got in on a grant and a scholarship that because her father, her biological father was Brazilian and her mother was Jewish. Because she had two minorities on her lineage, that was the reason why she was able to get find a grant for her because she fit into a pool. If you come in there and you say you're Aryan and you're a good person, for somebody to turn you away, that's ridiculous, man. That's ridiculous. If you're a family that's struggling and you want to have a good life for your kid, to have to get them have them have a good education, come on, man, come on. It should never, ever be based on color. This is absolutely going against. This is the antithesis of what we're talking about equality in this country. Why can't she get a break because she's white? Why can't she get a break because her family's struggling, because they're middle-class people? Why can't it just be about what it is that they can afford? Why isn't there something that they can do for themselves or to better themselves or better her daughter to better herself? Why can't it be based on her grades or her abilities or her knowledge? Why isn't it based on that?
Not every scholarship or grant is based on that, or on color or minorities. So what I'm saying is,
in order to get a scholarship, like a full scholarship, you have to get like. You have to be playing some type of sports, or you have to be like on the dean's list. You know, you have to be a straight A. You have to have some type of specialty in order to get a scholarship to get into a regular college.
And I got a better question, Mary. Let me ask this question: why does the government give subsidies or tax credits to businesses based upon the minorities that they hire?
Because they want it to be an even playing field.
Businesses wouldn't hire them otherwise.
The reason why the government does that is so that they, I don't know how to exactly say it. They have to because they want companies to hire so that there's no issue that there's no you know unforeseen issues of oh well.
Okay, fair enough, Mary. Mary, let's take a perfect example. You and I go for the same job. You and I are applying for the same job, okay? All right? I've got a 2-year associate degree. You've got a master's in accounting. And you and I apply for the same job, but we're the applicants. And the company owner is looking at the applicants, and they see that mine is African-American and you're white. And the company looks and they go, you know what? If we hire Reese, we can get another tax break because now we've got 15 African Americans working on there. We'll take the guy who's only got 2 years experience, but you got a master's degree and you're shunned that your ability and your knowledge, which is better than mine because you've done work and you have the master's degree, you get shunned. You get pushed away because the only reason why I was hired was because of the color of my skin. Do you think that's fair?
No, it's not fair at all, and it happens. I live right here in, you know, in the Mecca of Washington, D.C., so
okay.
It happens all the time. There are probably more black people working for government agencies or government contractors than there are anybody else.
Okay, can I jump in for 1 second?
Please, go ahead, J.C.
I can almost guarantee you, Mary, for every one person that has gotten a government job under that program, there have been at least 200 qualified blacks that haven't gotten jobs in the private sector because they were black.
I don't buy that one bit.
How could you not buy that?
Let's not forget why those things were put in place in the first place. It's because we weren't
because they weren't hiring minorities.
Well, you know what? Even if they weren't hiring minorities, whatever the reason is, but you know what?
It's not that they weren't qualified.
This goes right into affirmative action, and I'm breaking down to you like this. There's affirmative action in places like the fire department, the police department, even in teachers' unions. There's affirmative action, and I got to be honest with you, okay? If somebody is applying for a job in the fire department and they hired him because he was black, not because he was qualified, and you're putting lives in danger, I got an issue with that.
Putting lives in danger?
Yes, because guess what?
If they're not qualified to handle the job,
I can understand that.
Yeah,
I can understand that.
Because these
If they're not qualified to handle the job,
if they weren't qualified, whether they were black or not, they wouldn't get the job in the first place.
Mary, I got to cut them off. I got to cut you off for a second. Let me break this down to you, James. Sonia Sotomayor, who is now a Supreme Court justice, okay, her ruling was overturned in New Haven. This was one of the most controversial rulings in the New Haven district. And I know, JC, you know about this. There were five white firefighters that got an opportunity to be bumped up to lieutenant. Only one Hispanic passed the test. There were five whites, one Hispanic. They all passed the test. Because no African Americans passed the test, they were not allowed to get their lieutenant badges in the New Haven Fire Department. They sued, okay? And Sonia Sotomayor allowed that displacement to happen, that they couldn't get it. It was overturned by the Supreme Court. This ruling, it was overturned by the Supreme Court because she suggested that because there weren't enough black people who passed the test, that the white people who did the work, who passed the test, should not be allowed to get their lieutenant's badge. Now that, I'm telling you, is racist.
That's a true story, and you're right, that is racist. That is racist. Now, but we're talking about public positions.
But did any blacks get the job?
How could they? They didn't pass.
They didn't pass the test.
Right.
They honestly didn't pass the test.
Okay, so which just leads into my earlier statement. If they weren't qualified in the first place, they wouldn't have got the job. They didn't. Now,
A Supreme Court said because they didn't pass the test that the test was racially biased because not enough black people passed. It's ridiculous, James.
Well, they forced them to take a second look at the test, and when they took a second look at the test is being changed. So obviously there were some issues with it. I don't think it's because of this case, but that decision was made to make it easier for blacks to pass the test. But, I mean, when the test was looked at independently, because they brought in independent researchers to look at it, investigators to look at it.
They didn't end up changing the test.
But you're right. They didn't pass it.
Here's my question to you. How do you make a test easier for blacks? How do you make the test more? Do you think, I mean, are you really under the guise that black people cannot decipher a test? Like there has to be a racial specific test in order for them to pass? I mean, you understood, if you guys were been paying attention to this show, and I know you have, when teachers or when tests start to skew towards racial insensitivity, we get questions like, how many times was Frederick Douglass beaten a week? How many slaves picked oranges? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Like, that's what it is that you're absolutely asking for. Do you understand this? There's no such thing as a racially qualified test. You're either prepared to take the test or not. And it has nothing to do with race. What they're asking to do is to skew a test based on African-American experiences, and that's bogus. Because you as a firefighter are not going to deal with African-American experiences when a fire is blazing. You're going to be dealing with people who could die in a fire. Nobody cares about whether or not the people in a fire are black or white. The only thing they care about is saving lives. Black people don't respond to fires differently. They all respond the same. It's a fire, you're going to get burned, and you can die. Black people don't burn differently. That's where it gets ridiculous. I'm sorry I'm so passionate about this, but it angers the hell out of me.
But on the same token, to think that doesn't happen in the private sector elsewhere. I mean, I have been a victim of that. Although,
sure.
For reasons, I said I would never ever go public with it, but to discuss it and put it out there, I might as well. The hell, it's for the show.
Sure.
When I worked at AAA,
okay,
I had trained at least 15 other dispatchers coming in, and Reese, you know, and dispatch logistics.
Sure.
It's not something you can really train someone to do. It's something that you have to have in you. Not everybody can do that job.
Right. If you know your neighborhood and you know, I mean, if you know the logistics of getting to people and servicing their needs, I mean, it's just something that either comes natural or it doesn't.
Right, exactly. Well, I trained about 15 people, and I had never really gone up for a supervisor position before. But towards the end of my time there at AAA, within the last 2 years that I was there, I went for a supervisory position. Me and this other kid named Terrell. And he's African American as well. And we had he likewise had trained probably a little more than half of that of people of dispatchers coming in. And we went for the position, they went completely out of the box. So they wanted to get fresh meat in and hired Caucasian chick. She's white. She had just moved to the state of Connecticut from Idaho.
So she knew nothing about the area.
She knew nothing about the area at all, and they hired her for the supervisory position.
And guess why they hired her for the supervisory position? Because they could pay her less than they could pay you.
Possibly
no,
true.
It actually paid more than it paid me. They ended up paying her more than they paid me, but that was their excuse, was that they wanted to put someone fresh into the department. Now, mind you, I can train a dozen or so dispatchers to do my job, but I can't supervise them. There was something
okay,
wrong with
well,
that picture.
Let me give you a scenario at my job. How many times I asked to become a manager at my job? How many regional managers, how many general managers I trained that I trained myself as a patient coordinator, and at one point as a front desk manager, which was just a glorified patient coordinator. How many of those people I trained that were making triple my salary? I trained them. They had no experience, but they would not promote me for whatever reason. I don't know. I mean, I ended up getting a promotion anyway to a different position, but not to a management position.
Yeah,
not
but
to a supervisory position.
Well, I've got you
well,
all.
I mean, but were they all black that you trained?
All right.
No, they weren't all black. I trained black and white people, both.
Well, okay, right? No. So in my situation, you had two blacks who had been there for at least, I know at the time I was there for 8 years, and Terrell was there 2 years longer than me, which puts him there at 10 years. They hired somebody out at the company less than 2 months for that position.
Yeah, but we can't assume that that's because they're white. I mean, that may be what we believe or what we allege, but there is no proof of that. It's just what it is that we believe. Unless they told you right off the bat, we hired them because they're white.
No. But listen.
It's an assumption.
Hold on, listen. The one time prior that Terrell and I had both gone for that position, they gave it to someone that worked at AAA, but in a totally another department that had no real ideas of what we did in our department as dispatchers.
But they had knowledge of AAA rules and regulations. Maybe they didn't move you guys out of the positions that you were in because they felt that you were too strong in the position and they couldn't lose you in that position, because I'll tell you that is something, whether it's an excuse or it's not, that is something that I was told later on down the line, that, oh, we couldn't move you out of the position that you were in because you were too good at what you were doing and we would not have been able to find someone to replace you. And they still have not been able to find someone that replaced that position doing the same job that I was doing. Yes, they have someone in that position, but that person is not doing nearly what I was doing.
Nor are you getting, they told you that
they kept you in a weaker position, or they kept you from moving on.
They kept me from moving on until I started. Someone had said, my boss came to me and said to me, they want to move you into this other position, but I beg them not to because I need you here. You are so good at what you do, we cannot afford to lose you.
Did your pay reflect that?
No, I did not accept it. I told them that that was keeping me stagnant and that was not fair, that because I was doing such a good job at what I was doing and in the position I was in, that it was not fair to them to keep me in that position and not allow me to move, and that they had to allow me to move. And they knew in no uncertain terms that if they did not allow me to move, I was going to have to look elsewhere for other employment. So eventually, yes, they did move me into a different position.
Okay.
It's more or less evident, and I've seen this a dozen times over and over again. Usually in cases like this, where a lot of people deem that it might be racially motivated, I always say get the evidence first. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I'm just saying that.
Well, then I suggest you tell that to your stepdaughter and to your friend's daughter.
Well, again, they know why they couldn't get in, because she couldn't find anything that was possible for her to get in. But, you know, God, we spent the whole damn hour on this thing.
All I know is I've been turned down for a phone job because of my hair. Right?
James,
well,
you have dreads. You have dreads.
I have dreads, but I was working on the phone.
It's not the point. You look, you're inside
it
the office.
No. I'm working on the phone. All right? There is no other contact than with my fellow coworkers. It's a customer service job. I'm working on the phone.
I understand, James, but I don't agree. I think it's a look thing. That's just about look.
It's a look?
Yes, I think if you had a high top, I think if you had a high top thing, you'd have stayed.
A Gumby.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. It's Resort Radio. Stand by, guys. Top of the hour. Coming up.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity, all the...
Mary had a little lamb in Jesus by the snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we are back live here on blogtalkradio.com. Be sure to log on to reeseontheradio.com tomorrow. Sometime afternoon, we will be giving you updates on the court appearance tomorrow to let you know what Judge Wiley's ruling will be when I find out for myself for the first time tomorrow. And that's reeseontheradio.com. Send an email to reeseontheradio.com if you'd like to send you a personal note. We'll have that sent to you directly there. And of course, you can always catch us on Facebook at Reese on the Radio. The Intrepid Crew is here. Mary, why you bugging? JC, the producer, and the Kool-Aid man himself, James, is on the phones with us. We did a long and lengthy discussion about race and how it plays a factor. And it's funny because what I like about the conversation about race is it's always new, it's always fresh, and again, I always go back to Eric Holder. No frank discussion in this country about race, and we do it here. So for an opportunity to have that discussion, that's, you know, what we do here, and you know, people can join in on that, and there's no holds barred. You know, we keep it respectful. And even though we disagree, when we do, you know, we at least exchange ideas and we talk about our views. And I think it's a healthy forum for me personally. I get a lot of insight from even the person who I disagree with the most, and that is Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery. And I, again, we disagree strongly. But, you know, and it's funny, a mutual friend of ours, TJ, who says that if anything, he knows that whatever the issue is, James and I are not going to see eye to eye on it. It's, how could two guys be best friends and never agree? I don't know how that works. I have no idea how it works. But we work it out. I think the conflict brings us closer together as friends. I really, really think that's how it works. And I don't know. He'll probably disagree with that, too. He'll probably say something ridiculous like, he's always right, which of course we know is asinine, but nonetheless, you know, we do what we do. Again, it's Reese on the Radio. A story this was something I found personal because I come from a very, I would say a pretty strict family. Grew up with a single mom. My stepfather was in my life for about 8 years. My dad was never in my life. And I'd say the longest fatherly relationship I had was for about 8 years. And it's my little brother and little sister's dad. It's a person who I still refer to as dad to this day, you know, even though we didn't get along and he and my mom broke up a long, long time ago. I'm the reason why it happened. I caused them to split up. Yes, I take full responsibility. But as I was saying about being in a strict household, my mom took the belt, took the stick, took the switch, took the chair, took the table, took the toaster. I'm almost certain a small European vehicle has taken that to my ass quite often as a child. And I don't know. I can't use the term made me better for it. I don't know whether or not it did. I don't look back on those spankings or those ass whippings, as I like to affectionately refer to them, as something that would hurt me. So I wanted to bring this up because I thought, one, it being four of us who've come from an urban background, what they would think about this subject. This actually came from Reuters out of Toronto based upon a study. It says spanking children can cause long-term developmental damage and may even lower a child's IQ, according to a new Canadian analysis that seeks to shift the ethical debate over corporal punishment into the medical sphere. The study, published this week in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, reached its conclusion after examining 20 years of published research on the issue. The authors say the medical findings have been largely overlooked and overshadowed by concerns that parents should have the right to determine how their children are disciplined. While spanking is certainly not as widespread as it was 20 years ago, many still cling to the practice and see prohibiting spanking as limiting the rights of parents. That point of view highlights the difficulty in changing hearts and minds on the issue, despite a mountain of accumulated evidence showing the damage physical punishment can have on a child. And this comes from Joan Durant, a professor at the University of Manitoba. She's one of the authors of the study. She says, quote, "We're really past the point of calling this a controversy. That's a word that's used, and I don't know why, because the research there really is no controversy. If we had this level of consistency in findings on any other area of health, we would be acting on it. We'd be pulling out all the stops to work on this issue," unquote. Durant, who's the co-author with Ron Ensom, with the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario in Ottawa, cite research showing that physical punishment makes children more aggressive and antisocial and can cause cognitive impairment and development difficulties. Recent studies suggest it may reduce the brain's gray matter in areas relevant to intelligence testing. Now, I can't speak for the rest of the Intrepid crew, so I ask, spanking, good or bad?
Well, what kind of spanking are they talking about that's going to decrease cognitive behavior? I mean, are you running the child over? Are you banging their head into the wall? What kind of spanking does this? What kind of spanking decreases the gray matter or affects the gray matter in the brain? I mean, what are you doing, knocking the kid over the head with a baseball bat?
That is where I'm having an issue with this article, because they're using the term corporal punishment. And we hear that word when we say corporal punishment. I mean, when I hear corporal punishment, I hear the death penalty. I hear electric chair, gas chamber. I don't think spanking my child is corporal punishment.
Yeah, they've gone too far. I mean, parents should be able to spank their kids if they feel it necessary. Of course, you don't want the parents to go overboard. There's a difference between spanking your kid and reprimanding them and abusing them. So it's just stupid. I mean, my mother, like you said, you know, like your mother did to you, my mother did to me many of times, spanked me, smacked my hand. You know, she never got, well, okay, maybe she did get out of hand every once in a while, but that was only due to alcohol, or, you know, that was alcohol-induced. But it was never, she never hospitalized me. I never had to call, you know, child protective services on her, anything like that. And I think that her spanking me did affect me, but it affected me in a good way, not in a bad way. I mean, I am who I am today because my mother didn't put up with that crap. If she would have told me, oh, Mary Angela, you're in a timeout. Go stand in the corner for 10 minutes. I would have been like, yeah, okay, whatever. But the first time she spanked me that I could remember, all she had to really do the next time was look at me, and I knew better to do whatever I was about to do. I knew better. She made it known that she was the parent, and I was to listen to her because she knew better.
Well, it's interesting that you said the whole thing about the timeout, because if I would think of anything that would be associative to prison, it would be standing in a corner on timeout where you couldn't move. I mean, that would give me a clear association with prison life. Or go to your room where you're locked inside your room and you have to stay there for hours on end. I mean, they're talking about corporal punishment to associate it with, you know, prison life in some degree. But isn't locking a kid in their room the same thing? I mean, prison life is sitting in a cell 8x10 for a considerable amount of hours, you know, on a daily basis. I'm not getting the association here where they think spanking is not the same thing.
I don't get where they're saying that any of this can affect your cognitive. Where there's proof, I mean, they're basically saying that they have proof, you know, sound proof, evidence that spanking your child, that the children of that have been you know victims to spanking, that this has reduced their brain matter or their
brain matter.
How are you even studying that?
James, what did you want to say? I apologize.
Well, I never did understand the whole timeout thing. Okay, you cut up, you got in trouble, and the one thing they did was to send you someplace that, you know, where you did nothing. I always thought it was more a reward. I mean, some of these guys' rooms have like Xboxes and things of that nature. Sending to your room is no punishment.
It's a place to play.
Yeah.
I mean, and, come on.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, getting the spanking wasn't even the fact that you got the spanking. It was the shock value of the fact that, you know, all right, I pushed her this far. Okay, wait, I need to rethink.
Yeah, but you know what?
And the next time she gave you that little look, you all know that your mom's had that little look. She could snap her head around and look at you, and you just be like, all right, chill out now. Now it's time to chill.
JC, did you want to give a comment on this? Because I think I have a reason why this study came out.
Well, I look at it like this. I say tap that ass. Spank it, beat it to the white meat.
I wouldn't go that far. Damn, you talk about assault charges.
Listen, time out. Time out is where you give your kid an opportunity to think of all the bad things they want to do to you.
Well. You know, my definition of a timeout is when I take a break from whipping your ass. That's a timeout.
Exactly. Let me take a timeout.
That's the only timeout I know about. But here's why
in timeout, I'm standing in that corner. I'm thinking about, okay, well, I hear them talk about an insurance policy. Maybe it's time I run up on it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think, listen, what I think this study is about, and here's what I really, really think the agenda here is in this whole study, is that what they're trying to teach children they're trying to teach children to be nonviolent by separating violence from their lives. Now, here where it is that I'm going with this. We're talking about Canada, a place where a lot of our troops during the Vietnam War, a lot of our recruits ran to get away from the war. Now, I'm going a little far back here, but follow me for a bit. What they have is a very pacifist behavior. And if they figure that they don't subject children to violence, they won't know violence and they won't be violent people. So when kids go to school and they have disagreements, they'll be able to work them out without responding in a violent way. They're almost blaming kids fighting and arguing in the streets or their bullying or whatever it is that happens in young children's lives. They're in some way associating that with parents putting their hands on them, saying that, oh, violence only begets violence. You are violent to your child. Your child is violent in the street. So they believe that these kids who are being violent are only subject others to that violence, are influenced by the violence in their home. So what they're trying to do is, again, this is another form of indoctrination. Let's get all violence out of the household so children don't recognize it. They don't behave, you know, up to it at all. and there's some conflict resolution without fisticuffs, which is
if that's the case, then I guess kids better stop watching TV. They better stop playing Xbox games. They better stop playing PlayStation games. I mean, you might as well just lock them up in a room and give them a teddy bear to play with. I don't know what else to tell you, because there is violence everywhere.
What's the only thing that most people respond to? It's the thing that it's an innate thing that's human. People respond to violence.
But if spanking your child is considered violence, that's a problem. Now, if you are being violent to your child, then you are beating the daylights out of them.
Oh, certainly.
That's violent. Spanking them, smacking them when they touch something that you said don't touch, and then you smack their hand and say, I told you don't touch it, or you let them burn themselves on the stove when you tell them it's hot, don't touch it, and then you touch it anyway. I told you don't touch it. I'll bet you won't touch it again next time.
Mary, you make a valid point, because I think what's important about what you just said was, now if you were beating the daylights out of your child, the child's revenge, if he's beaten unmercifully and he wants to respond to that beating, he will probably take it out on cats, dogs, other kids who are smaller than him, because he wants that revenge because he's getting beaten so bad. A spanking, on the other hand, and teaching that child that what the spanking is about, this is discipline versus I'm going to beat your ass, there's a difference.
And that's the difference that may affect beating the daylights out of somebody, may affect their cognitive behavior, may affect their gray matter, may affect all that, may affect them physically and mentally as they progress or as they regress.
But this study doesn't care about that. This study wants to eradicate all forms of this punishment, all forms of spanking.
This study wants to control people's lives. That's what this study wants.
You're absolutely right. Go ahead, James.
I'm all for living in a nonviolent society. I'm all for it. More power to it. It's just I have only one problem with it. No one ever seems to tell the other guy. No one ever seems to tell the other guy because they're running wild. Right?
Why should you be the one off guard, right?
Yeah. Why is it I the one who's got to turn my other cheek? You know, I'm running out of cheeks.
Yeah, it's almost like they're setting you up for failure. They're saying, no, James, you shouldn't fight. Use your words. Well, this guy's using his fist.
Now, see what you did? You used your words. Yeah, I'm using my words. I'm saying ow a lot.
Exactly. The word I'm using is stop hitting me. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And again, I can't stand this pacifist society that's telling people not to fight. I think, and I know what's going to happen. You know what it is that they see a future of? They see a future of no conflict. They see a world with no war. They see a world with no violence. That's what it is that they see. And again, it's sad, but you know, I know that's what it is that they're trying to do.
But what they see is what the world that they live in, or the world that they want to live in, is totally unrealistic. They live in a fantasy land because it's never going to happen. What are we going to be like? What was that movie where you went into this neighborhood and it was like just all happy, happy. Everything was full of color. What was that movie?
Oh, Pleasantville?
Yeah, Pleasantville.
No color.
Yeah. Okay, come on. This society will never be that. This country will no country will ever be that. It's just not realistic. I mean, we have people that are born with, you know, with all the things aren't going off in their brain properly. I mean, it's never going to happen. It's not going to happen no matter what they do.
What they need to do
is stay out of people's homes.
Sure.
Unless there is true abuse going on, stay out of people's lives, mind your own business, raise your own kids the way you feel fit to raise them. If you want to put them in a freaking timeout, then put them in a freaking timeout. If that works for your kid, then that's great. And then go for it. But for some kids, that crap doesn't work.
Don't worry.
You got to beat their ass every now and then.
Well, you're absolutely right, and those would be the kids that'll get punched up. Those are the kids that are getting beat up.
Yeah, because they're going to go home and say, Mommy, little Tommy punched me in my face today, and that's why I have a black eye. And Mommy's going to say, oh, come here, let me put a steak on it, honey. It'll feel better. I'm sure Tommy didn't mean to do that. And tomorrow when you go to school, Tommy's going to kick your ass again.
That's exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, honey, you shouldn't have, you don't keep running into Tommy's fist.
Yeah, well, yeah, try to make friends with Tommy.
Yeah.
No, Tommy. Run the opposite way next time, Brad.
Right. Yeah.
Tommy only
exactly.
wants to be friends but, with my lunch money.
I don't believe in that study on that philosophy, because if you take 2 6-month-olds
right.
who really don't understand what it is that they're really being exposed with, that they're just barely able to sit up, or can sit up pretty well, and you put one toy between them, they will get it in for that toy.
Sure it is. Sure.
I've seen little kids that age, I mean, fight like grown men.
It's a natural reaction for kids to find violent something that they respond to. It's just, it doesn't matter who it is that they are. This is who they are. But again, I think this is just a scary study. I think it's harmful to most parents who don't teach their kids how to fight. Anyway, when we what did you just do? You just cut off my audio. Anyway, we'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about something that I found odd. McDonald's had to pull an ad because they were insensitive to pit bulls.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we come back. It's Streets on the Radio.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question, which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative, rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun. Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
And we're back, folks. It's Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. / Reese on the Radio. And don't forget, folks, tomorrow at noon, log on to reeseontheradio.com for updates on the upcoming case or trial or whatever it is. Whatever it is that's going to happen. We will have the details for you, of course, tomorrow after 12 noon. I'll be posting the updates. And whoever it is out there would like to know, please send an email to reeseontheradio.com. Let us know that you're out there, you're concerned, you're interested in finding out what's going on. And we'll fill you in, as usual, as we always do. Let you know what's up with me, what's going on. Still trying to do this radio thing. Of course, with my wonderful crew, who's come on to help me out. And, of course, that's the Kool-Aid man, James Montgomery. Mary, Mary, why you bugging? And JC, the producer. So, the story that, I always go back to, I always have to make it something personal, because this happens all the time.
Lower your mic a little bit, please.
Oh, lower it?
Yeah, move it.
Okay. I always notice.
Again.
How about now?
Sound like you're talking in the water, real bubbly.
Oh, I apologize. I don't know why that is. I'm not, maybe, okay, how about now? Any better?
Perfect.
It was me. Anyway, one of the weirdest things that happened to me when I was a kid was I was bitten on the elbow by a German Shepherd when I was in the fifth grade. And I have to admit, it affected me for the rest of my life. I don't like dogs. Never have, never will. And I had dogs. I had mutts. But I had dogs. They were mutts. So any particular breed of dog... And you know who you are. German Shepherds. Rottweilers. Great Danes. Dobermans. Chihuahuas. I'm not a fan. Yes, Chihuahuas. Those things are real, you know, they're antsy. Never have been a fan of those either. So anytime I'm around a dog, I'm really, really nervous. But the one dog in particular I don't like are the Child Eaters. And you know who they are. Yes, that's what I call them. Children eaters. Yes, they will eat your child. Swallow them whole. Especially when they're hungry. Pit bulls. Now, I don't care whether or not you had a pit bull. I don't like Yorkshire Terriers either, JC. I don't care whether or not you had a pit bull in your life or you love them or they're great. He's so lovable around the kids, blah, blah, blah. Trust me, that son of a gun is waiting to swallow that nine-month-old whole. He doesn't look like anything more than a tasty treat. The baby walked up. That's all that dog wants to do. Swallow him whole. Now, I know I see all these people with the little baby. Look, the baby rides the pit bull. And I know the pit bull's thinking, yep, get in front of me when I'm hungry. let me miss a meal. I'll swallow you right up. That's what a pit bull's thinking. That's what they're always thinking. And I don't like that. So I'm going to be probably a little subjective here. I'm going to be partial because I don't like them. Never have, never will. Not a fan. So, when I heard this commercial, I couldn't help but agree. And I'm, listen to me, I don't care that they're not running this ad anymore. I'm going to run it right here on Reese on the Radio. Until they tell me, until I get a phone call from me, from the people, and they tell me, stop running it. I'm running that ad right here. And this is a McDonald's ad. And they had to pull the ad because of what they said about pit bulls in it. And it's a valid comment that they make in the ad. Funny, it's supposed to be humorous, but it's a radio ad. Apparently it ran in Los Angeles. But I didn't see anything wrong with the ad. And this is the McDonald's ad for their little chicken bits, you know, that everybody's eating. Now, I like them. They're pretty good. Little pieces of chicken breast, and they're the little sort of, you know, look like tater tots, you know, kind of fried thing, whatever. But they're good. But this is the ad that ran that created all the controversy.
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password, ultra risky. So trying a new menu item at McDonald's is about a zero on the old risker scale. Try a snack size of our new Chicken McBites for free with purchase of any extra value meal from January 30th through February 5th. New at McDonald's means no risk, delicious reward. Participation may vary.
So that's all they said. That's all they said was, what could be risky?
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your...
Petting a stray pit bull. That's it. And it's got the animal activists all up in arms. One quick line, petting a stray pit bull. Isn't that risky? I'd say that level's right up there with pretty freaking risky. It's right on top of the moniker. I saw a stray pit bull. I would call it risky to run up and pet. Here's a smoochy, smoochy. That's it. I'm going to get eaten or mauled. Petting a stray. But they have. It actually caused so much of an outrage that McDonald's was forced to do this.
A local radio ad has inadvertently offended some of our customers. The ad was insensitive in its mention of pit bulls. We apologize. We are pulling the ad, and we'll do a better job next time. It's never our intent to offend anyone with how we communicate news about McDonald's.
So they apologized. When you call up McDonald's, they apologized. For this little quip.
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull.
That's it. And now they're up in arms. Come on, folks. Ridiculous or warranted?
Ridiculous.
I mean, come on. You're going to tell me that petting a stray pit bull isn't risky?
Hitting a stray ferret is risky.
Go ahead, Mary.
I don't understand who was so offended by that.
Apparently, there's a coalition of pit bull lovers.
The midgets on Easy.
But even the coalition of pit bull lovers. Why would you be offended by that? Don't you have a job somewhere to be every day? Is that, I mean,
Harvard Life?
Sure, at the Colossus.
Why would you be offended by that? So what? It is risky. As a coalition, as a pitbull coalition, you ought to be saying, hey, McDonald's, you're right. It is pretty risky. We know a lot about pitbulls, and it's pretty risky just to go up to any stray pitbull or any stray animal, for that matter, and pet them because you never know what could happen to you, especially if you have a McDonald's bite in your hand.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely
funny. I didn't even think about that.
This
or,
is,
if your fingers smell like you recently eaten McDonald's bites.
Yeah, I mean, isn't this a little bit overboard? I think that people can just protest for the sake of protesting.
But exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what they do because they have nothing better to do.
I'm stunned by this. I mean, they literally, and McDonald's caved.
That's just wow.
They threw in the white flag on that.
I mean, I've never ever seen anything.
They caved quick. They didn't even put up a fuss, nothing.
They
didn't even say, oh, come on, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would have said. I was like, come on, folks. I mean, knock it off. I mean, it's just a joke, you know. We're not saying that pit bulls are, you know, mean breeds, but we're saying a stray pit bull, wouldn't that kind of be risky? And you know, these people are talking about changing the conversation about people's prejudice towards pit bulls. And I'm going, in what way was this prejudice? And a pit bull doesn't care if you don't like it, unless you own it. I mean, then the pit bull would be pretty angry. I mean, if you owned a pit bull.
But some crazy animal lover has got to be the voice for the pit bull. Because, you know,
what I
want to
know is, what pit bulls were offended at this? I mean.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, please, tell me
the pit bulls are probably like, can we get some of those McDonald's bites?
It's ridiculous for people to make this argument. Every time I see stuff like this happening, I'm always wondering, why do they cave so easily to a pit bull group?
Is the pit bull group or pit bull coalition big enough to say, oh, well, we're not going to eat a McDonald's, so is that really going to hurt McDonald's profit?
As soon as they get any type of recognition or whatever, there's going to be, you know, the followers who are just going to get out because, you know, oh, it's a crowd of people, here's something to do, I have no life. So they'll find some type of follower. There's going to be the hangers-on.
Right.
You know, people who don't even really care about it just to be part of something.
And those same followers that come out for the protest will probably stop at a McDonald's on the way home to grab something.
Mary, you say the coalition big. Are you serious? The only representative that they truly have are the midgets on A&E.
What?
Huh?
You said the midgets on the what?
On the midgets on A&E.
Midgets on A&E.
The midgets with the pit bulls.
Yeah.
Pitbull Rescue Squad.
That's right. You know what?
Paroles
and pit bulls.
Like that.
Paroles and pit bulls.
Yeah, that is.
So let's put the meanest dog with the meanest people.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think really, really hurt McDonald's in this particular case was for you to acquiesce so soon to this group that's probably got no real power. I mean, they don't have any real power. You're giving them power by forcing yourself by apologizing. You're giving weight to this ridiculous argument. And I've never seen anything like it in my life
they're opening themselves to be ridiculed or criticized for every ad here from this point on.
You're
I mean,
absolutely
everybody,
right.
everybody could look at everything and say, oh, that was insensitive to something or another, whether it be plants, animals, people, fat people, skinny people, chickens for that matter. I mean, where's the chicken coalition at?
But you know what? That being said, you know, thinking about that ad, and if I may play it again, I can find, if it's so easy to find a problem with this ad, I can find
trying
another
a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password.
Okay, so naming your son Sue. Can't that now be an offense now?
Yep.
I don't think so. It's a song.
No. Naming your son Sue, what if you're Asian? What if you're Asian?
Naming you. Wait.
What if you're Asian? What if your son's name is Su Ling or Su Chang? Su Chang! Come on. Asians could find a problem with that. I'm just saying, if we can grasp at straws, let's grasp at straws.
And that's exactly what they opened themselves up to that.
They did. They're opening themselves up to ridicule over and over again. Every time you turn around, that's going to be an issue now.
Those chicken bites, they just found a way to sell the crumbs on the bottom of the damn chicken nugget fryer.
Yeah.
You're right. It's going to be.
I mean, they found a way to market crumbs.
Yeah.
Come on. Are we that gullible nowadays?
Are you saying that you think the chicken bites are crumbs?
Yeah, just like popular chicken at KFC. They're crumbs.
I don't think they're crumbs. I like them.
You've had them.
But still, yeah. It's still finding a way. I mean, you're chopping up real fine, making it into like itty bitty pieces. All right? It's crumbs. It's still crumbs, man.
I don't know. What, 30 of them to get a mouthful?
It can't be any worse than their chicken McNuggets.
Leave the McNuggets alone. I happen to like those.
No, those
McNuggets are disgusting.
Oh, you're killing me here. Listen to me. Never, ever disrespect the McNugget.
No, I agree with you on that one.
It's not even real chicken. It's like processed. It's like, if you bite into it and look at it, it doesn't look like you bit into a chicken breast.
It has white meat in it. Yeah, it does.
The stuff is white, but it's not meat.
Why you bargain? Listen to me. Ain't nothing better than a chicken McNugget and the
really?
Chicken thing. Ain't nothing better than that. You want a quick snack? Chicken McNugget.
If you want real chicken, you better get a grilled chicken breast or a fried chicken sandwich. Don't count on the nugget.
A fried chicken sandwich with the bones and everything in it? McDonald's takes all that away.
Not with the bones in it. McDonald's doesn't sell fried chicken sandwiches with bones in it.
They used to sell wings. They used to sell wings at McDonald's.
I think that woman is straight up crazy. She doesn't like chicken McNuggets. What is wrong with her?
Something's wrong with her.
Something's absolutely wrong with her. Chicken McNuggets. She got something against chicken McNuggets.
I don't have anything against chicken McNuggets. I'm just saying it's not real white meat.
Well, what the hell is it then? That meat looks white to me.
It looks white, but it don't look like meat.
It tastes like meat to me.
White meat
no,
ain't not white meat.
No,
that's typical.
No, it don't.
Yeah, this is white on white crime.
Typical.
No white meat. White on white crime we're watching right here. The hell is
no, you better go to Popeyes or churches and get yourself a chicken breast.
Churches?
Oh, it's churches?
Churches.
Churches is pretty good.
Oh, man.
baked chicken.
They both said Church's fried chicken. No one's even said that name in eons.
No, they're on 8th Avenue. They're on 8th Avenue right at the corner of 42nd.
Well, we again, listen.
I'm scared of why you know where churches is at.
Yeah, I'm surprised, but I don't even know where one of those is at.
And you don't even live in that I hardly ever visit.
Well, anyway, here's again. Let's play McDonald's apology again. I cannot believe we apologize if we offended any. Does she say pit bull owners? What is she apologizing for?
A local radio ad has inadvertently offended some of our customers. The ad was insensitive.
Now, when is pit bulls customers?
We apologize.
What'd you think, James?
When are pit bulls customers?
Exactly.
A local radio ad has inadvertently offended some of our customers. The ad was insensitive in its mention of pit bulls. We apologize. We are pulling the ad, and we'll do a better job next time. It's never our intent to offend anyone with how we communicate news about McDonald's.
Oh.
I love the fact that they say, we're sorry about whatever, and we'll do a better job next time.
We'll do a better job. Again, it's ridiculous. It's sad, but you know what? That's what happens. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have, there's some other stuff that we have to get into. We'll probably tease the next hour. Do you guys know about Proposition 8?
Yeah.
Ah. Well, of course, Proposition 8 was overturned, and we've got some audio about that ruling. And, you know, the immigration conversation has taken a fever pitch in the national news media. And I really, really want to get into that today about, James, we all talked about this today, about the indoctrination in our schools and what it is that people are being taught to believe. But what I really, really don't like in our news media today is them taking a slant in news reporting today about subjects that they topics that they support, that being gay marriage, that being immigration, and all of these other topics. There's never a fair and balanced approach in the mainstream news media today, and it's driving me up the wall. So I'm going to give you guys two reports. We'll talk about the illegal immigration issue that's happening in Alabama, and when we come back, we'll also talk about this Proposition 8 ruling that's going to end up in the Supreme Court, and why I believe personally that the state of marriage in this country is going to be bastardized because of homosexuals. They're the people that I blame. Absolutely. So we'll take a quick break. I'm absolutely positive. I know.
Did you have to say bastardized?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what's happening. The state of marriage in this country is being destroyed, and it's being bastardized.
By who?
By the gay mafia. By the gay mafia. And there's only one way to combat them.
What are you prepared to do? Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do?
If you open the ball on these people, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I don't know how to get him.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. Now, do you want to do that? Are you ready to do that?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and I know you've got an opinion, so give yours. The number is 347-308-8701. 347-308-8701, right here on Reese on the radio.
Yes, love hurts. It can hurt emotionally, but more important, it can also hurt you physically. It can hurt you in a way which nobody who owns a hot tub and lives in California can afford to be unaware of. Yes, I'm talking about California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. This painful and curable disease can make an enjoyable soak in a hot tub with family, friends, and dog into a literally unforgettable experience. If you catch California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, not only will you walk around feeling like you're about to pass a twisted sardine can lid, you'll also smell like a pile of burning tractor tires. So don't jump out of the frying pan and into the hot tub, because if you get California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, it'll really burn your ass.
This has been a public service message brought to you by the Citizens Against CHTRG Foundation. California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. We're not going to take it sitting down.
Hello, Lois. This is Mike. I'm the personnel director here at your husband's work.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you?
Fine.
Lois, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I have some bad news.
What do you mean, bad news? Bob's okay, isn't he?
Well, actually, that's why I called to talk to you. It's about Bob, and I know that he's been an employee here for a very long time, but I'm afraid we're going to have to let Bob go.
What do you mean? Wait, that's not very fair. He's been very loyal to you.
Look, I can understand you feeling that way.
Feeling that way? You don't understand. We just had a baby.
No, I understand that.
This is a very hard time to do this kind of a thing.
Yes, it is, but Bob has kind of forced our hand on this.
Why are you firing him?
We caught him doing his secretary on his office desk.
Oh, that son of a bitch!
Look, I know you're upset.
Upset is not the word. That stupid, rotten son of a bitch. I can't believe this.
He's on his way home right now, and he's going to need your support.
Support my I'm going to change the locks on the door. I'm throwing his outside on the front lawn. He can just have it all. I'm not even going to be here when he gets back. And now, I don't feel so bad about his brother.
Lois. It's a joke. Your husband put us up. It's your birthday. Happy birthday!
This is Stephen Hawking, and when I'm not solving the mysteries of the world, I listen to Reese on the radio on DogTalkRadio.com.
Where's the runway?
Oh, yeah, baby. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. Yes, we are going to be talking about the ladies. Hi. Well, not the ladies, but, you know, the people who want to be. Whatever.
The girls.
Hi. We're going to talk about
You're bubbling in the water again, buddy.
Oh, damn it. That's me again. Okay, how about that? We good?
Much better.
Anyway. Yeah, I got to move away from the wire. It's my bad. Anyway.
Wow. No. We're back at it, buddy.
What's that?
Okay, there we go.
Oh, okay. Anyway. So, yeah, we're going to talk about this Proposition 8 when we come back. Also, another very important issue. They're talking about, I've read this today online, sadly enough, that now there's this new argument about American kids who are being denied food stamps in Alabama under the new immigration law. And it's just a tidbit of news, which I'll give to you in the next 3 minutes, and then we'll get into the Alabama immigration law as well when we come back. But anyway, they're saying some U.S. children with parents who are illegal immigrants have been denied food stamps under Alabama's new immigration law. Southern Poverty Law Center President Richard Cohen told Yahoo News on Monday, five people have called into the group's Alabama hotline to say they were denied food stamps because they couldn't prove that they were legal residents. As it should be, even though the food stamps are for their children who are citizens. Cohen says the civil rights group, which has already filed two lawsuits against Alabama over the law, will most likely bring another suit over the denied food stamps. The law makes it a felony for a government employee to engage in business transactions with illegal immigrants, which some government employees have interpreted very broadly. Illegal immigrants have been told they can't pay their utility bills or even their taxes because it would count as a transaction with the government, according to Cohen. Excuse me. Barry Speer, a spokesman for the Alabama's Department of Human Services, said in an email to Yahoo News that it is not the agency's policy to demand proof of citizenship from the guardians of Americans who need food stamps. We are unaware of any violations of the policy. Anyway, several parts of the law have been temporarily blocked pending the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals decision on whether the law is constitutional or not. But the business transaction prohibition as well as a mandate for local police to ask proof of legal status during stops. Those were left to stand anyway. Some Republican lawmakers say they want to amend the law this year, while a coalition of Democrats is trying to repeal it entirely. Illegal immigrants are prohibited from accessing most welfare benefits, including food stamps, non-emergency Medicaid, and cash welfare programs. Their children, if born in America, can access welfare programs as citizens. The Pew Hispanic Center estimates that about 4.5 million Americans, citizens under 18 years old, have at least one undocumented parent. Last month, Kansas kicked off more than 1,000 mixed-status families off its food stamps program when it joined three other states in adopting stricter food stamp eligibility policy. A low-income family of five made up of two undocumented parents and three children has shown that its income has close to poverty level for a family of three, not a family of five. In order to access food stamps, this intended to prevent illegal aliens from benefiting from food stamps, but immigration advocates say it will have most of those citizens go hungry if they don't get the programs. The Justice Department has sued Arizona, Alabama, South Carolina, Utah over laws that crack down on illegal immigrants, saying they interfere with the federal government's control over immigration. Supreme Court will hear arguments over Arizona's SB 1070 beginning on April 25th. So when we come back, we will talk about Alabama's new immigration law, and we'll get into some audio when we return on Reese on the Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Hey, how's the little man? It's Christmas like a snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I help send against you.
And welcome back, folks. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on Blog Talk Radio, top of the hour, of course. And, of course, I just read the story about Alabama's laws about illegal immigration and what it is that they're trying to do to curb illegal aliens from receiving food stamps. Now, this has been a hotbed issue for a lot of news media outlets, primarily because, and no one, you can dispute this all day, but ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, those news organizations clearly have a leftist agenda. And they do not believe in borders for this country. They believe let every Mexican come in. They believe in let's pay for everybody off the taxpayers' back. They believe in that. I don't care what anybody says. That is a fact. That is their agenda. Sumner Redstone, the head of Viacom, which runs CBS, MTV, all of those networks, Nickelodeon, said in an interview, anyone who does not know that mainstream media has a leftist bias is living under a rock. This is the head of a major network organization, Viacom. Said it himself. The head of the news organization has said it. And if you ask anyone who's ever worked, I mean, Keith Olbermann was was suspended for several days. Why? Because he was contributing to Democrats and liberals while he was supposed to be a objective a newsman on MSNBC. And now he's on Current TV, which they don't mind whether or not he gives political contributions to leftists. But they are on the left side of this issue. And at the risk of demonizing people who are, to give the impression that most people are left-leaning, they will demonize those who disagree with them. Now, if you don't believe me, just listen to the report for yourself. And this is Scott Pelley on the CBS Evening News talking about the Alabama immigration law.
Nowhere is illegal immigration a more pressing issue than in Alabama. In September, Alabama began enforcing the toughest law in the nation. As written, it requires schools to verify the citizenship of students, and it lets police arrest people who don't have ID. We asked Chip Reed to see how enforcement of the law is going, and he starts tonight with one of those families that Newt Gingrich was talking about.
When 15-year-old Jose Perez says goodbye to his mother and family each morning before heading off to school, he asks himself an agonizing question.
Is this the last time I see them? Is this it? And I can never really come to terms with that.
What has Perez so frightened is the section of Alabama's tough new immigration law that authorizes police to jail without bail anyone suspected of being in the U.S. illegally and to hand them over to immigration authorities. The Perez family came from Mexico illegally 13 years ago. They work hard and pay taxes, but now live in fear of being separated.
You spend a lot of time crying.
Yes. Because it's not fair.
I voted for the bill because I don't support having illegal people here.
But Alabama State Senator Gerald Dial says there have been some unintended consequences. For example, the requirement that schools determine whether each student is here legally, a provision that's been temporarily blocked by a federal court.
School teachers and administrators are not policemen. They need to be teaching.
In Tuscaloosa, at least 66 people, most of them U.S. citizens, have been jailed for driving without a license. Prior to the law, most would have received a citation.
And that was just an oversight. So these oversights need to be fixed.
The law's supporters say illegal immigrants cost Alabama $250 million a year on education and social services.
Life's not always a bed of roses.
Gene Deason, a real estate agent outside Birmingham, doesn't want another penny of her tax dollars spent on illegal immigrants and wants the law enforced.
They knew when they came here illegally that they were taking a risk. One of those risks is the fact that they may be separated. Now accept your risk and go on with your life, but don't ask me to support you in what you've done illegally.
Adelina Perez says she considered fleeing Alabama with her family after the law was passed. Not anymore.
We are going to fight.
You're going to fight.
Fight. To stay here.
Fight to stay in a state where many want them to leave. Chip Reed, CBS News, Birmingham.
The Alabama law is being challenged by the federal government. A federal appeals court has held up enforcement of some parts of the law, waiting for lawyers to make their argument.
The federal government is fighting a state. Is fighting a state. That is a lawsuit against its own for illegals to live in their state. It's costing $250 million in taxpayer money to feed, house, to take care of, health care, illegals. And the federal government is fighting a state, in essence, telling the state of Alabama, I don't give a damn how much it costs you. Let them stay. We will continue to tax your ass so they can say, we'll sue you for it too. You, the American citizen, born here with rights under the Constitution as a legal citizen, is being fought by its federal government for illegals to stay in here and cost you money. And they're calling it, CBS is calling it a controversial law. How is this controversial? This sounds cut and dry to me. How in the hell can the federal government, the people we give our tax dollars to, would be suing us, the American citizens, so that illegals could come in here? And for that woman to get on her high horse, and for God's sakes, I can't believe her. We're going to fight. It's not fair. What's not fair? Can I come into your country illegally and live there? Your president, Calderon, said explicitly that other places like Nicaragua and Guatemala cannot come into Mexico because they have strict immigration laws. We would pack them up and ship them. But if you ask Calderon about Mexicans going into the United States, his argument is, but they go to America to do the jobs that the Americans don't want. He won't let illegals out of any other country come into his country. But, oh, no, 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 cross the border into America so you can do the jobs the Americans don't want. Now, did anybody recognize any bias in that reporting? Anybody? Anyone? 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 Let's go to the Intrepid crew here. I mean, Mary, come on. I mean, I know it seems like I'm being insensitive, but let's be fair.
No, I don't think that you're being insensitive. I think that for the federal government to be suing the state of Alabama to enforcing a law, isn't it a federal law that you cannot come into this country and be illegal?
Yes, it's a federal law. No, but their argument.
How are you fighting the law that you came up with?
Yeah, exactly. But the federal government is saying that it should be left up to them, the federal government, to deport illegals, not the state local state government. The state itself should not be allowed to give those illegals to the federal government and to move them out of the country. It should be left to the federal government to handle immigration in this country. Even though they don't have boots on the ground, even though local residents, local law enforcement is there with their boots on the ground, dealing with their citizens on a day-to-day basis, they're taking the power out of the local government. I mean, the local government and the local law enforcement's hands. They're saying, no, look, you can handle every other crime that happens in your jurisdiction, but stay away from the illegals. That's us. We handle that.
Well, how come the federal government isn't fighting? It's state law in California that you can, you know, legally sell marijuana and all that other crap.
They are, but you know, again.
But it's against federal law to be in possession or to be selling marijuana. How come they're not fighting in California against that? I mean, I don't get it. It's so stupid. These are you don't have any. There's no federales out there chasing down illegal immigrants.
They're not patrolling the streets. They're not patrolling crimes. They're not processing criminals in any way whatsoever. They're doing no law enforcement there. The local law enforcement there, the police forces, the sheriff forces out there, they're the ones doing the work. But if you engage an illegal, you have no right to deport them. You have no right to you. I mean, it's like what? It's not so much about sovereignty. But I would think that we have to have some protection under the law as American citizens, that if illegals come into our state, we can extradite them.
Why isn't the federal government and the state working together?
Because they
refuse
to. Why
are they working against each other? It doesn't make any sense. We're not – it's like when you're a kid. You go to mommy and you ask mommy, mommy, can I go outside? And mommy says no. And then you go and ask daddy, daddy, can I go outside? As daddy says yes, but daddy didn't know that mommy said, but daddy wasn't aware that mommy said no. It's like playing one over the other, and it doesn't make any sense.
And again, this happens every time whenever there's a liberal or Democratic administration, the only thing they see Mexicans as is a vote. So the only thing they're doing is acquiescing to this group.
But you can't vote if you're here illegally. You can vote.
Ah, that's the reason why. Again, look at what it is that can happen, and all of it streamlines into a group of bad behavior, of corruption. Think about it this way, Mary, and this is exactly what's happening. Republicans want voter ID. They want voter IDs. And how the voter ID process works is, you know, you, like any other ID, you get, you know, you get your driver's license or your state ID. And when you get your voter's registration card, it's a voter ID card that has your picture, and you can prove who it is that you are when you vote. Now, Democrats are completely against it, ardently against it, because they're saying that voter ID is nothing more than discrimination. Why would they call it that? We're not asking for just Mexicans or just blacks or just Latinos or just Asians. We're not asking for any particular group to just get voter ID. We're asking that everyone have a voter ID card. But Democrats call it racist.
But wait a minute. I have a voter's registration card.
You have a registration card. But you can get that. If you have a voter's registration card and it's a female name, I have no proof that you're the person who's on that card. It's no picture on it. It's just a voter ID card. I mean, it's just a registration card. It just means that you're registered. There's no proof of who it is that you are. And the fraud.
Yeah, but I think that when I go to the polls to vote, that they ask me for my driver's license and my voter's registration card.
Not in a primary. Not in a primary and not in a caucus. Not at all. You can watch online Project Veritas. Look up Project Veritas on YouTube and watch James O'Keefe's report at the Iowa caucus. We had people walking in. He had his reporters walking in and giving the names of dead people. And they all got a ballot to go in and vote. And when they asked them, the guy said, can I go get my ID to show it to you? They said, you don't need ID. They said, nah, I feel better going to get my driver's license. But they said, you don't need it. You see what I'm saying? So the bottom line is that the reason why people are protesting this is because they know this is nothing more than vote gathering. That's what this is for. It's vote gathering. You acquiesce to these illegal citizens, and what do? You get them to the ballot box. They're the people that you go after because who you target? You target their community churches. You target their community programs. You target the schools that these kids go to. Send this home to mommy. Tell mommy if she wants to stay in the country, here's a way that she can do it. Vote legislation. She can go in and be a part of the primary. She can go and be a part of the caucus. Just vote D. Vote D next to the name. And that's what they do. They get the people who they want running, and those people acquiesce. They do, you know, that's the whole process. And the reason why you'll always see, why would the federal government, why would this federal government sue a state? They're suing three states over this law, Arizona included. The federal government is suing their states, and the only thing they're trying to protect is their natural-born citizens. It makes
the
no
law,
sense.
It doesn't make any sense. The law is the law. And regardless, if you are if you work in law enforcement, you should be able to enforce that law, regardless whether you're federal or state.
But look at the argument that I made about the food stamp program. Look at the story about the food stamp program. They're making this whole claim. They said, they said, this is intended to prevent illegal immigrants from benefiting from food stamps, but immigration advocates say it will leave citizen kids hungry. The bottom line is you come here illegally, you have an anchor baby, so you're telling me that I should give you, an illegal immigrant, a food stamp because you came in here illegally and had a child. You put your child in that position, not the government. When do we become responsible for your mistakes?
But you know what, Reese? This is where things need to change. They need to stop that crap that now you're an anchor baby. So, I mean, they're leaving it open. The laws that we wrote or the laws that our government wrote that's a loophole. And they need to close that loophole.
Well, you know what? I don't care if your kids starve. I'm sorry. I don't care. It's
all right,
your
damn
job.
Reese, that's
I'm sorry.
Funny.
Your definition of an anchor baby?
I don't care. My definition of an anchor baby is an illegal immigrant who comes here, has a child in our country, and that child automatically becomes an American citizen. So the kid has to stay here because it's an American citizen. Therefore, we can't separate the mother or the father from the child. So he's an anchor baby. So the parent has to stay. That's their anchor. So that's the definition of an anchor baby. And I don't care if your kid starves. I don't care. You want to, your kids want to eat? Take your dumb ass back to Mexico. I'm sure you got family.
Take your kid with you, right?
And take your kid with you. Get the hell out of my country.
Why can't we do that with the, hold on. Why can't we do that with the Brazil chick and the baby last week?
What do you mean with the Brazil chick? Oh, we were talking about, what was her name?
Well, the United States want to claim that baby.
She wasn't, no, she wasn't Brazilian. What was she? She was Ecuadorian or something like that. I forget. Guatemala. She was Guatemalan.
Yeah, the one, Carlito's mom.
Yeah, Carlito's mom. Yes, you're absolutely right. We should have just taken that kid, but they put the kid in adoption, so that creates an issue because he's been there for 4 years. That's a little different. But if the child was still with the mother, yeah, absolutely. Extradite their asses out of there. If your kid's starving here, that means you're making no money here. And if you're not making, that was the reason why you came here in the first place. You came here to make money. You came here to make a living. You're making nothing, and now you want to fleece off the rest of us? Get out. Get out. Pack your crap and get stepping. You have to leave. You're not contributing to anything. Plus, you're not. And, you know, this bogus lie that Scott Pelley says, or whoever the reporter was, who says that they're paying taxes. How? You're an illegal. How are you paying taxes? You only pay taxes if you got a Social Security number. You're an illegal. You don't have a Social Security number.
You can get a Social Security number on the street for $500.
Exactly. And you still won't pay any taxes. How are you paying taxes? To what? The only taxes you're paying is when you buy goods and services on the street. You buy something at the store, you pay taxes there. You buy a dollar soda, you pay it. I mean, you buy a 99-cent soda, you pay $1.08. That's the only taxes you're paying. You damn sure aren't paying any taxes. You're not paying federal taxes. You're not paying income taxes. You don't get a paycheck from a reputable or legitimate place. So to even suggest in this audio that they paid their taxes, you already said they came to this country illegally 13 years ago, and you're worried about being deported. As far as I'm concerned, Scott Pelley, why don't you just tell us where they live? Seriously.
And I mean, in 13 years, they haven't worried about trying to become a citizen.
Yeah, and I'm supposed to be tugged at the heartstrings because this little high school boy is talking about, I don't know if I'm going to come home and find out whether or not my parents are gone. I know a couple of kids who got drug dealers for fathers and drug dealers for mothers who don't know if their mom's going to be home when they get home. What are we going to do for them? Huh? Because what they're doing is just as illegal as what your family's doing there, Pablo. That's my point. I don't have any more empathy for them than I have for you. It's time for you to go. And you're old enough to take care of yourself. Get a paper out. But your parents have to leave. We'll let you stay. But no food stamps for you. Get your butt over there to, one of them day laborer jobs. Whatever it is that you folks do in order to make money. Huh? And get a legitimate job, too, so you can pay your taxes, too. We want to bleed you dry, too. $250 million in one state for your illegal immigration, and we're supposed to care? We're supposed to be so upset about your poor little family and whether or not they might not be here? Trust me, nobody's crying over your spilled milk. Leave and take your starving babies with you. Seriously. Just as quickly as you jump the fence, jump back over. Just don't die over here, because I'm not paying for you or your child's funeral.
Reese.
That's how I feel. I'm sick of the immigration problem in this country. I'm dead serious. There are people out here who are coming to this country who wish to be here legally, and they are kicking their asses to get citizenship here. They are doing the hard work. They are dealing with the INS on a regular basis. Do you know what the INS is like on a regular? It's worse than the DMV. There are people who get cut. They are getting cut in line by these vagabonds, these ne'er-do-wells, these cheaters, these losers who think that I'm supposed to care about them because their names is Consuelo or Hector. I don't give two craps. I don't cry for you, Argentina. I could give two craps about you or your starving infants. I'm sorry. I don't care. because the same argument that's being made in this country every day is that this country doesn't care about the starving that are already here. They're all going overseas, taking care of other people's problems, but can't feed the poor here. Because one state is spending $250 million on your immigrant kid. That's it. You want to know where we could be spending that money? How many people could we feed with $250 million? Huh? We're spending that on you illegals, you people who don't belong here. And there are kids who are born here, whose parents were born here, who are legal citizens, who are living in the hood and in a ghetto, who need a break, and that money could be wisely spent on them. And not through programs, but on jobs and on opportunity. But we're sitting around here worrying about an illegal who can't get a job, who ain't paying their taxes, and a starving little infant. Take your bugaboo and get your ass out of my country. You don't belong here. You don't deserve to be here. I struggled. I scraped. I borrowed. I begged to get to some point where I can keep my head above water. And you're not getting any freebies. To hell with you. If you can't make it here, you can't make it anywhere. Go back to your country. The reason why you're here is because your country sucks. Please stop talking to me about what's fair. You know what's not fair? Thousands of you are getting shot a month over drugs and other crap that you bring into this country that is making a blight on my society. How about that? Kidnappings, beheadings, AK-47s, shooting through schools on a regular basis in your crap hole of a country. And now you want to come here and talk about what's fair? Straight garbage. I'm sorry. I have to say it. I hate you people. I hate you. Especially when you start talking about fair. It's time to take a break. We'll be back.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how you
doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz. There's Dr. Phil. There's Dr. Drew. There's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem. You deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back the last half hour of the show here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. Tell your friends that we're doing a show here. We're not sitting around talking to ourselves. Just kidding. Some people check in, and they do. We appreciate it. We're really, really happy that you folks are checking in as often as you do. So, the guys had to check in on me. They were like, are you okay? Are you all right? That, you know, again, immigration is something I'm very, very passionate about. And, again, it's an issue that a lot of people don't have enough guts to say what it is that they think about the immigration issue. They just don't. A lot of people don't have the guts to say what it is that is the truth. And people keep talking about compassion, you know, but the argument is always made in the African-American community that nobody has any compassion for them. There are other Latinos in this country, Puerto Ricans alike. They always say that nobody's got any compassion for them or for their issues. But, you know, when I don't hear anybody talking about that on the level they talk about illegal immigration in this country. And why is it that their plight is more important? This is also very, very true with the gay community.
Where's the runway?
It is. And this story bothers the hell out of me because, look, everyone wants to talk about democracy, right? Always wants to talk about democracy in this country.
Where's the runway? I got one thing to say. That's Shay Shante.
But there is no democracy in this country. There never is, and there never ever will be any democracy in this country. Because we are a republic. That's what we are. Look up democracy, then you'll know. We are a republic. Come on, folks. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible. Doesn't say anything about democracy in that. Not in the Pledge of Allegiance. Because we are a republic. See, a democracy is when the majority rules. So when you hear all these people talking about the word democracy, they know what it means because they believe that it should be a democracy where majority rules. Well, the truth be told, if it were that case, then we wouldn't have this argument today about the gay community.
Where's the runway?
I'm just making a point here. So here's a story about Proposition 8 that happened today and how the law was overturned. But to give you some background, Proposition 8 works a little something like this. During the 2008 election in November, they asked the citizens of California to vote on gay marriage. It was called Proposition 8. And plenty of celebrities came out endorsing it. In fact, I remember one commercial specifically where Molly Ringwald from the John Hughes movies fame, 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club, is there with her husband, and she's standing there talking about vote yes on Proposition 8. Now, all of these celebrity endorsers came out talking about Prop 8, pass Prop 8, Prop 8, Prop 8, make Prop 8 happen, Prop 8, Prop 8, Prop 8. Make marriage get right for everybody. Make right. So they all knew it was going to be legislation that was going to be voted on. They were all on board. Prop 8, Prop 8, Prop 8. And they voted. And by a margin of 52%, the same percentage that elected Barack Obama in the presidency of the United States in a popular vote, 52% of the vote, voted against it. They voted no on Proposition 8. No gay marriage in the state of California. Now, the gay community was, of course, up in arms. But what did they scream? Homophobia? Sexism? All the usual rhetoric. But here's what they never, ever reported. That African Americans voted 70% against gay marriage. 70%. 70% of the African American community voted against gay marriage, a gay marriage proposal in the state of California. Did the gay community go after African Americans? Of course not. It's a war they can't win. Imagine telling black people that they should be more sensitive to homosexuals. Try it yourself. Go ahead, try it yourself. I dare you. Go call a black person a homophobe and see if he'll flinch. Tell a black person how he needs to understand homosexual rights and see if he gives a damn. He'll look at you like you got three heads on your neck. He'll laugh you right out of his neighborhood, much less his face. So who did they go after? They went after white folks. Said it was their thing. White folks, the Anglo-Saxon male, that's a problem, blah, blah, blah. But they passed the law. They said, hey, we'll vote on it. We'll give the people their vote. Democracy, right? We'll make it. We'll ask the people, should we make it a law? So they said no, 52% margin. Because the only answer for the gay community was yes. Sure, we're going to ask them to vote on it. Because the only answer to this can be yes, they'll never vote no. Homosexuality is the mainstream now. This is California. Just like New York. Just like Massachusetts, those people are with it. They're mainstream. That's what mainstream Americans think. That's because from New York to Malibu, the spaces in between, they don't even think that country, that place exists. Those people in America, those people in Colorado, those people in Nevada, those people in Idaho, those people in Texas, those people in Kansas, those people in Wyoming, those people in Montana, North and South Dakota, those people in Michigan, those people don't exist. Those regular Americans, those people in Indiana, they don't exist. Those people in Alabama, those people in Georgia, they don't exist. Those people in Arkansas, they don't exist. Those people in Louisiana, they don't exist. No, you got to be You got to be cosmopolitan. L.A., San Francisco, New York, Boston. You got to be one of these Chicago, these middle America. You guys are bumpkins. You know nothing about this. But California voted. So they were stunned. 52% of the electorate said, no, we don't want gay marriage in the state.
A federal appeals court has declared California's same-sex marriage ban to be unconstitutional. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled 2-1 to uphold a lower court ruling that stated that Proposition 8 violates the civil rights of gays and lesbians.
Every American, regardless of race, ethnicity, or sexual orientation, deserves the same dignity and respect, the same freedom to love and to marry and to build a family.
The court says the Constitution requires that there be at least a legitimate reason for the passage of a law that treats different classes of people differently, and that there was no such reasoning behind Proposition 8. The ruling is almost certain to be appealed and could reach the U.S. Supreme Court. Prop 8, as it's known, was a voter initiative that passed with 52% support in 2008. It was spawned just months after the state's top court legalized same-sex marriage. It's estimated 18,000 gay couples tied the knot before the ban took place. It's not clear now when gay marriages might resume in California.
So again, they voted against it, but now their vote doesn't count. And just a sidebar, the Ninth District Court is probably one of the most corrupt Supreme Courts in the land. And when I say liberal, left-leaning activist judges, oh, you couldn't get a better place. Because guess where the Ninth District is? you couldn't even assume where it is. Oh, sure you could. I left my heart in San Francisco. Why wouldn't you think that they would overturn it? Let's go to the Intrepid crew. So, do you think that the people weren't heard? I mean, it was a vote. The American people came out and voted. And they voted against it. And the judge said, we don't like the way you voted, so we're overturning it.
Well,
nobody.
I think that it should be overturned. I think that they should be able to get married.
Really?
Yeah.
Married.
Yes, married or civil union or whatever.
There you go. That's the word I was looking for. So have a civil union. Stop mandating churches to marry them.
No, now if they're mandating religious churches that, I mean, the sanctity of marriage comes from religion anyway, you can't mandate a Catholic church to allow, you know, a same-sex couple to go in there and get married by a Catholic priest. I mean, you can't do that.
Of course you can. President Obama is now mandating churches to give out contraception, make contraception available at Catholic churches. Yes. You didn't know this? It's a federal law. The Catholic Church is going to war with Obama over this.
No. They better go to war because the government cannot tell religious. No, they can't do that.
They're mandating churches give out contraception to its citizens as a health. As a sort of a health provider. In other words, even though the Catholic Church does not agree with contraception, does not believe in killing, you know, they believe life begins at conception. They don't believe in birth control. They believe in, you know, Planned Parenthood, but they don't believe in Planned Parenthood as the entity or the organization. But they believe that when people have sex, they have children. They do not believe in contraception, but now the federal government is mandating that they give out contraception at their churches. And it's absolutely unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. But this is what the Health and Human Resources, Kathleen Sebelius, has been talking about it all week. So you don't think that gay marriage is now going to be, of course, mandated by the church, that they, no matter who it is, Man, woman can go into a church and have a priest perform those ceremonies.
Well, listen, there are I know here in D.C., there's a lot of churches that are either gay friendly or run by, you know, gay and lesbians. So if you want to get married in a church like that, that is for gay and lesbians, then I guess that's okay. But civil unions, I mean, you can't force that on religious people, on people that truly believe the word of God and truly believe what's in the Bible. I mean, you can't change. What are they going to rewrite the Bible next?
No, it's actually called. See, this is the interest. This is the interest of, again, these people. The bottom line is that while they're busy screaming their freedom to behave the way that they want to behave, to live the lives that they want to live, while they're screaming freedom, it is at the expense of others' freedom.
They're not allowing, I don't have anything against gay, lesbians, nothing.
No,
This is in no way, shape, or form, you know, a personal attack on anyone for any reason. But you can't say, if you want your freedoms as any group, you can't say that other groups have to give up their freedoms in order to grant you your freedoms.
Of course you do.
It doesn't even make sense.
Of course you do. That is the whole rule of law. Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. You find a target, you isolate it, and you take their rights away. And that is the religious groups. That is conservatives. You isolate a group and you eliminate it. You make them the target. You vilify them. You excoriate them. And what the gay mafia in this case has done is targeted the Catholic Church and the church in general and has said, you don't let us get married, so now we need to make you change your rules so that we can get married. But wait a minute, this is our religious belief. But that means nothing, because what we want is more important than what you have. And that's
you can't go rewriting people's religious beliefs.
Sure you can. Again, what you have.
I understand your point, but get my point. You're saying sure you can. But no, you can't. You shouldn't.
But who's stopping them? The federal government is helping them.
But you can't put government and religion together. You can't.
That, again, this is a bottom line. It's not so much that I'm trying to get you to see my way. What I am trying to do is to see the forest for the trees. There is an agenda in this country by liberals. And when I gave that long speech last week about liberalism, this is their agenda. What we want is more important than what you have, because what you have definitely disenfranchises us from what we want. And what we want is to change all the rules. Forget about you have a religion and tradition. It means nothing. Your tradition sucks. There's a new way. We're progressives. That's what liberals call themselves now, progressive. We progress. Oh, yes, we understand that you like traditionalism, marriage is between a man and a woman. Well, we want to broaden that so it can be sociable and acceptable for woman and man to man, because we progress. We want black people in every form of every job that we can get them in, and for them not to even have to be close to the remnants of slavery, we need them to progress. We need to make sure that Latinos get freedom of all types, because we have to progress. We allow and we allow and we permit and we permit and we progress and we progress and we progress, and all while breaking down the standards, the traditions that this country was founded on, which, by the way, they hate. The New York Times wrote an article yesterday that said that our U.S. Constitution is hated across the globe. But the truth of the matter is that we have the only constitution in the globe that protects its citizens from its government. How, of course, China would hate that. The government has control. Of course Turkey would hate the Constitution of the United States. They are not in any interest in protecting their citizens. They want control. You couldn't imagine any country out there that would love a document that says the people have the power. How could they ever love that? And see the conditions that they live in. Iran, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Russia. Come on. When Georgia seceded from Russia and became its own country to form a democracy, why do you think Russia keeps trying to take it over? They raided it in 2008 and tried to take it over again. But why would a government want to do that? Because they would form a constitution where the people have the power. And again, only thing this federal government is trying to do today is to take that power from its people and to give it to radicals.
Listen, everybody, if you're gay, straight, whatever, you should be able to get married or have a civil union, whatever, and you should have the same, you should have the same rights as, like, married, taxpayers and stuff like that. You can share each other's health benefits. You can do all that. But that doesn't mean that you can just go into any church that has had the same religious beliefs for eons and change things. You can't do, I mean, obviously you can do that because they're trying, but you should not be doing that. You cannot mix state government, federal government, and religion. You can't, those two cannot be fighting.
But there, it's funny because your news media will tell you that these religious groups are out of touch with mainstream America. And who do they mean by mainstream America? People who think like them. They don't know who mainstream America is. They don't know who mainstream America is. They don't travel in circles of mainstream America. They travel in circles of their liberal elites who believe what they believe. They don't know anybody who thinks outside of their box. They don't know anybody who thinks outside of their box. They hate conservatives. They hate traditionalists. They hate culture warriors like myself. They hate us. They go after us, they attack us, they demonize us, because we have some sense of tradition. And if anything, that is against their progressive movement to make gay marriage legal, to change immigration laws in this country, to just open up our borders. That's what it is that they believe.
Everybody should have equality. Everybody should be treated the same. Everybody should have the same rights, but that's, you can't mix that into religion. Religion is a whole other entity in itself. I mean, you can't just go rewriting people's religion or their religious beliefs or rewriting the Bible.
And I agree with you there, but you know what?
The Quran.
And that's the scary part, because you notice that the only religion that they are attacking is Catholicism and Christianity. They're the only ones they're attacking.
Is the federal government going to mandate that people can go into mosques and get married in the same sex?
Hello. Hello, hello, hello. No, they are not, because their religion is protected. You want to know why? Because those guys will strap a freaking bomb to themselves and take out anybody who comes into their mosque talking about gay marriage. They will cut somebody's head off.
But those mosques are on U.S. soil.
That's right. If their mosque is on U.S. soil, every one of those politicians fighting for gay marriage will say, yeah, but the mosque, you can't really ask them to do that. It's really against their religion.
Can you go into a synagogue? Are they gonna oppose that against Jewish people?
Absolutely not. But they'll find a Jewish person here or a Jewish person there that doesn't have a problem with gay marriage, and they'll put him on the news and talk about, oh, you're crazy, of course, I'll have a marriage as soon as possible for anyone who wants to be married, man, woman, gay, it's gay, straight, it's no problem. They'll put him on the news. They'll do it any day.
But they're not going to force synagogues
but
to
they will not force
up
them. What
to
they'll
perform
try to,
marriages.
Nope, but they will try to change the conversation by indoctrination. That's exactly what it is that they'll do. Mary, I got to be honest with you. I wish that I could just show you the things that I've seen and the light that has been shown on my eyes about this country and what liberals do, on a regular basis. about how leftist this country wants to take us and how damaging it's been to this country, how the culture of the way that we live has been so destructive thanks to liberals in this country.
Me?
And again, go ahead.
And I mean, I'm not even a liberal. I'm not even a religious person. Like, I don't go to church. I don't do all that stuff. I don't necessarily believe everything that's in the Bible. But you can't just force.
What's your respect?
But I'm not running around forcing my beliefs on the church. I don't go into the church every Sunday, and you know, and protest to them that I don't believe what they do, or I don't believe in everything and the way that they operate. I mean, that's their business. And it's my choice not to go there and not to interact.
Right, you respect it. You respect their religion.
Mary?
What?
If this man whips out some shades and offer Kool-Aid, I'm running for the hills.
Are you trying to make a link with me and Jim Jones? Is that what you're trying to do here?
No, Mr. Jones.
Listen to me. Only thing that I can say is, again, I'm sick and tired of hearing over and over again these horrible stories about how things are changing in this country, and for the and this BS of, you know, trying to be progressives or make the world a better place. It's getting worse.
The president of the United States doesn't even have to put his hand to his heart when they're singing the national anthem or when they're, you know, doing any. He doesn't have to do any of that.
Well, look, again, he wants to fundamentally change this country, and he's got a fleet of minions in his group who are doing it to this day. They are absolutely doing it. Listen, tomorrow I'm going to get the audio when I get back from court tomorrow. I want to make sure that I get the audio. In 2009, I want to talk about how disgusting this administration is. Are you guys familiar with the Fast and Furious debacle?
No.
Kind of.
Okay. Well, of course, people know that the Fast and Furious thing was the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Department of the Department of Justice. They let 2,500 guns walk over the Mexican border. One of the guns ended up being used by a drug cartel. The plan originally was supposed to have those guns walk and then be followed and traced to the drug cartels. And once they were traced to the drug cartels, that they would get members of the drug cartel and arrest them. That was supposed to be the sting operation. Well, the guns walked, 2,500 of them. No one traced the guns. They didn't lead to any arrests. But one of the guns was left at a crime scene where one of our own ATF officers was shot and murdered with that untracked gun. The proof
was that the young Caucasian gentleman that they were just talking about recently on the news?
Yes, his family has filed a $25 million federal lawsuit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The reason why Fast and Furious happened was because of a speech Barack Obama gave in April of 2009. And I'm going to play that audio for you tomorrow. And I'm going to tell you how Barack Obama set up Fast and Furious as a ruse to make a false positive. And I'll have that audio tomorrow. That the reason why 2,500 guns walked over into the Mexican border was to attack the Second Amendment in this country. It was done to recalibrate that amendment, the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, to change that law in the Constitution. They let 2,500 guns walk so they can actively change our Constitution. So we'll talk about that tomorrow when we get back, and I'll play the audio of Barack Obama's own speech and a report that turned out that he was flat out lying. based upon an exclusive report that was done on the news. So anyway, we only got a couple of seconds left. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys as always, Mary and JC. I appreciate it. I know I dominated most of the thing. I don't know what happened to James. I guess he had chores. We'll see you guys. We'll see you guys tomorrow. We love you. Same time, 7 o'clock tomorrow, right here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com.